Welcome to Better Cast Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 3, Episode 10. It's the season finale titled Lantern. What did you think of this episode?
I'm going to turn the tables on you. What did you think of this episode?
I was blown away by it, and I don't know why necessarily, because I should have seen this coming. I was blown away specifically by the final scene. I should have seen it coming. Breaking Bad is not a show that shies away from killing people.
Mm-hmm.
But it hasn't happened in Better Call Saul yet to this degree. So I was really surprised when they had the final scene be Chuck's suicide.
Yeah.
It blew me away. I was not expecting it.
Are you convinced that he's dead?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, here's the thing. I will feel, if Chuck comes back in the present timeline, if mm-hmm. it's not a flashback or something, betrayed. Much like I felt betrayed in a show that has recently pulled that same trick on me and brought the character back. So, you know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, I guess shame on me again because...
Right. George Bushing it, eh?
Yeah, I'm totally George Bushing it up. I don't mind.
I agree. I feel like the door is open, but because of everything that they have told us and the language of cinema and the look on Chuck's face and the fact that he's at the proximal location of the start of the fire and the fact that he's turned this house into a complete fire hazard.
Yeah.
Like all the things that go into modern home construction to retard fire, he is largely, well, he has actually poked holes in.
Mm-hmm.
And I would feel like that him living would be a giant cheat.
Yeah, totally.
And I agree with your thoughts in the episode it's being blown away by the end. And I feel like this has been a strong last three or four episodes of what I think is a bit of a frustrating season as a whole.
Okay.
I feel like there's a little bit of foot dragging, a little bit of aimlessness, and then curiously, a little bit of rushing of the plot. Like, Jimmy flipping, like, last episode was the fall of Jimmy McGill, and yet we see Jimmy McGill clawing back from the depths of Sauldom by the end of this episode, which was very confusing to me, because I feel like that's the third time I've watched this in this particular series. The fact that they revealed that Kim was in on the old lady scam...
Mm-hmm.
Does not make any sense in reference to what I know about her character, especially in light of her giving a speech about wanting to be Atticus Finch. Like, there is some stuff that they have played really fast and loose with in this development and feels uncharacteristically haphazard and ultimately unsatisfying. The stuff with Nacho I thought worked beautifully, and that was a very efficient and great arc. I think the stuff with Gus has worked. I think the stuff with Mike has mostly worked. There's a little bit of foot dragging, but unfortunately the core thing with Jimmy, I wonder if they're having trouble, you know, strangling their own child here, that they, this foot dragging about Jimmy going to Saul is because they've kind of realized there aren't that many interesting ways to tell a story with Saul, especially with as much time they've spent with Jimmy. And you can see, I don't know if you've read any of the interviews with Gould where they're talking about, it sounds like they're sure they're going to get one more season, but not sure if they want or need more than one, and certainly more than two. And I wonder if some of this ambivalence is, you know, we're just not sure where to go from here, and we know where we want to get to, but we're not sure how long that'll take and how much we want to spend time with Saul. I don't know. I don't want to cause everyone alarm, get everyone all pissed off, but I do think that this is not a super out of the mainstream opinion amongst Better Call Saul fans.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, and at times it has felt that way to me. I want to make comparisons to other shows, but they're still on the air and they're recent, and I can't do it. Let me throw out an alternate theory, though, is that they are simply playing this as Jimmy's personality. Because Chuck, in this episode, calls him out on essentially being the guy who likes to break things and then fix things.
Mm-hmm.
And he repeats that cycle over and over again. And we can kind of see that in Jimmy's track record in this show, right?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, he does claw his way back from being, like, ultimately Saul.
Yeah.
Time and time again, but we know eventually his fate. I feel like they might be writing to that.
Yeah, I think that they're belaboring the point a little bit with that. Like it feels like maybe, and it's not a lot of fat, but maybe a half season of fat at this point has accumulated on the bones. I also think a lot of what Chuck says about Jimmy applies to Chuck himself.
Sure, yeah.
He just has a different way of punishing himself. I mean, I feel like Jimmy's apologies and expressing remorse and feeling bad are his way to atone for things he knows he's done that's bad, and I think, you know, Chuck punishes himself with this electronic illness thing.
Right, yep.
And there's a lot of things I like about this season. Like, I really love the telltale heart mechanism that they've established, that the metronomes and the clocks clicking and the drops dripping, and then, you know, Chuck's rhythmic foot stamping to ultimately knock the lantern was a great payoff on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like that. It's just there's a couple things that just feel like there's a couple screws loose to a ship that's usually been so tight.
I do see, you know, holes in the wall. Holes in the wall of plot every once in a while.
Yeah.
There's one in this episode, which I thought was pretty ridiculous, but we'll get there.
It seems like there's a few things that keep Jimmy from just becoming Saul, and that is the fact that he admires his brother and he craves his respect, the fact that he loves Kim and he wants her to respect him as well, not just as, like, you know, oh, that scoundrel, but as a good person.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he's also had this career that he's established taking care of elderly people that he found rewarding. And there's not a whole lot of legs left on that three-legged stool that's keeping him from like, even though he has kind of, you know, very minor case redeemed himself. And I thought it's interesting because you said, like, anyone that was excusing Jimmy last week was a sociopath. A lot of Better Cast Saul listeners, sociopaths, apparently.
Yeah.
You should go into diagnosis, or you should go into some kind of practice to help him out, be their Dr. Cruz.
Yeah.
A lot more people want to just, like, all is forgiven now that Jimmy has fixed this thing with another giant scam. And I'm like, I don't know about that.
Right. Because I ultimately think Chuck is right about Jimmy. Like, I think they're right about each other, you know?
And that's a tragedy,
They're both far enough away from each other's problems to see them, whereas they're both so close to their own that they can't. So, like, I fully believe that Jimmy is the kind of guy who breaks things just so he can fix them sometimes.
And my only thing is, I still don't know. Like, I feel a lot more sure that the ultimate first sin was a misunderstanding between Chuck and Jimmy over the way they view their parents' business.
Okay.
And that Chuck got the wrong idea, and that Jimmy got the wrong idea from watching his dad be a pushover, and they took very different paths in life and held those resentments and those preconceptions into adulthood, and they're locked in this Greek tragedy. So it's tough, and it's interesting as a hashtag fuck Chuck guy. I felt like this episode really tested me because they gave me a lot of raw red meat for the fuck Chuck wagon. But then it's hard when you're watching him destroy his life in his house and be completely powerless before this problem that he has. It's hard not to feel sorry for and pity for a person who's sick.
Yeah, how do you say this is what you deserve in that scenario, you know?
Yeah, it's like, I kind of like, you've seen Gattaca, right?
A long time ago.
But you know, like Jude Law is such a shit in that movie and such a self-pitying bastard, but still when he crawls into the incinerator tube to give his genetically inferior brother a shot at happiness, it's hard not to feel for, you know, like, okay. And I felt like it's that without the redemption arc. Like, I just saw him crawl into the incinerator tube and take all of his DNA with him. You can't have any of the DNA, Jimmy. You're always going to be a runt. I guess at the end, still, like, I'm a toasty. Hashtag fuck Chuck.
Uh-huh.
But it is tragic. It is tragic.
It is, yeah, certainly.
And hats off to Michael McKean for...
Yeah.
I mean, I've said it a lot. There's a difference between hating a character because the character is hopeless and it's terribly written and it's shittily performed and really playing a character like a violin to get that hatred out of people. And hats off, because this is one of the more memorable, sympathetic villains I can think of in recent memory, and just You know, even, I mean, god damn, like the stuff with him and Howard was just so excellent in this episode. But yeah, like I said, I love this episode, and I really like this last three episode arc, but there's a couple things off, and I feel like this season's the weakest of the three seasons of Better Call Saul so far, because...
Yeah, you might be right about that.
Strong finish, but ultimately I don't feel like it built as much as the previous seasons did. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's the thing. Jimmy's better at tearing shit down than building stuff up.
It's true.
Including his own television show.
Yeah. Yeah, including these old ladies.
Take a break before we get plunge into our scene-by-scene recap of the episode to talk about a couple things here at Bald Move. Number one, again, it would really help us out if you would complete our survey. It is anonymous. It just takes a few minutes of your time. It just asks some anonymous demographics data and some questions about how we're doing and how we are succeeding in our mission to delight you here at Bald Move. bcs.baldmove.com, or you can check out the show notes if you can't remember the link and link at it from there. Also, just let you know some stuff going on at Bald Move last week and this week. We had a really interesting commission podcast about Scorsese's Shutter Island starring Leonardo DiCaprio, which Jim tried to make, is going to later, I think, in the episode, make some allusions to. But I want to check that out. Cecily and I recorded a American Gods and House of Cards update podcast, and we closed out Handmaid's Tale's first season. That's on the Bald Move TV feed. We also, for club members, released today Bad Guy Javi, the next installment of the Walking Dead Telltale video game playthrough. Next week, very excited about Baby Driver, the new... Edgar Wright. I want to say Jeffrey. Yeah.
Jeffrey Wright.
Also got starring Don Draper.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of people that I've drawn a blank on. Jamie Foxx.
Yep.
He's there playing a blind singer against type.
John Bernthal, is he in this?
John Bernthal's in this.
Yeah.
Kevin Spacey's in this.
Right.
Frank Underwood himself. Lots of people. It's going to be awesome. And then stay tuned to the end of the week, the final, who won the week. It's Fargo, it's Better Call Saul, they're in a steel cage locked in Minnesota. Who makes it out with their ears intact? We'll see. That's all we got going on at baldmove.com. Again, don't forget to survey bcs.baldmove.com.
Okay, let's get into the recap of this episode. We start off with young Chuck reading a story to Jimmy as they camp in a tent at night. We find out, I don't know, this is kind of just a nice scene, right? Older brother reading to his younger brother. They're clearly out in the backyard just, you know, camping.
Also, whoever they got to play young Chuck is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah,
like
he's real good.
Like, I'm almost suspecting that they did some kind of manipulation of McKean's actual voice because...
I mean, according to the insider, no.
No?
The kid
so
just
that kid
did that, yeah.
Just like studied that dialogue and got because
and he did it before the audition too. He came in with that.
Wow! Because yeah. I was like, well, I guess maybe they actually had Michael McKean read this passage and then like, okay, kid, you've got a week to practice and get this down. But like, that's impressive.
Yeah,
this guy is a real chameleon because he's kind of got the look, but and this scene, what's most important is the voice. He's got the voice down pat.
He did.
And I'm wondering, that actually has me kind of hopeful for flashbacks to come. Because, again, do you feel like that you're owed an explanation about what this original sin was? What was the thing that caused Cain to want to kill Abel? You know, we've heard Cain say that it's because Abel was taking money out of the till. We've heard Abel say, I've only taken, like, weirdo coins for my... I feel like we need to know who's right there to ultimately understand the complete tragedy of what's afflicting the characters. Do you agree or no?
I think I mostly agree. The trouble, I think, is going to be pinpointing it to a thing. It's not just going to be, you know, here's the switch.
But isn't
changed
that
everything.
What Chuck always starts his litany of sins against Jimmy with that? And if that's the first thing, then you can kind of easily see that if he never got that idea that my brother... is a thief, mm-hmm. and he's stealing from my lawful good parents and ruining them, that he might have a very different... I mean, it's a tough road to hoe because the other thing is you could also think that maybe Chuck just wasn't as loved and adored, and he invented reasons. He saw things that weren't there. And
maybe.
But I do feel like I need to know that for sure. Like, I don't know that can be something that the fandom just can debate over and over again because it feels foundational.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. And, you know, they're not I guess, eliminating the idea that Chuck will be back in potentially flashbacks. Yeah. They haven't even said whether or not he's actually dead, but
well, I'm with you, though. Yeah. I'm be by hashtag fuck Villa Gang. If, yeah. Even though I love you for your past, if they pull that shit.
Right.
And I guess I would actually... I've been burnt enough by calling bullshit on Vince and Peter that I would be very arms crossed, lips pursed, eyes narrowed if he's like third degree burns in a burn ward, but I would not write it off until I see what they do with it.
Right.
I also like, because we began a season with Mabel, mm-hmm. and Jimmy and him reminiscing about them being read to this, and Jimmy misremembered that his parents read this to him, and Chuck said, no, it was me.
Yeah.
Do you think Chuck hurling this barb later on the episode that this the truth is I just don't think that much of you is him trying to wound Jimmy for the wounds Jimmy's given him, that he, like, Jimmy doesn't even remember how much of a foundation Chuck laid for his childhood, or
totally.
How much he was there for him?
Yeah, I think it's a straight up lie. Chuck
oh,
does
yeah.
care about Jimmy. He's stone cold lying to him just to hurt him.
But is it a hurt that he feels like he's repenting? I mean, that's, I don't know if that's an interesting question. I guess I was trying to get at, like, why open up with this?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously there's the lantern, but you've also got the Mabel thing and the fact that Chuck had to have been upset that Jimmy didn't remember this little piece, this little childhood scene. I don't know. That's something important. I'm not quite sure. Maybe it's just something that's supposed to feel emotionally.
Right. I did have that question too. And I think, where I've come to on it is it's there to show that at one time Chuck did care for Jimmy.
Did you notice the Adventures of Mabel way. Was right next to the lantern as Chuck's kicking it at the end?
Oh, is it?
Yeah, like that had been yeah. fresh in his mind.
Yeah, also the baseball bat is apparently the same one Chuck uses to smash the electric box, the
right.
power meter. So
right.
he's held on to a lot of stuff from
yeah.
their childhood.
He's a surprisingly sentimental person for someone who's so ready to set fire to all the bridges, including the one to his own life.
Including, I guess, the howl that Jimmy does when he's conning people.
Oh, shit.
Comes from Chuck, I guess.
Oh, shit.
Like, he invented
You're right.
that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's an identical howl.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I thought that was pretty awesome.
It's the McGill howl.
Yeah.
You hear that and you know it's your ass.
So we go over to the hospital. Kim's getting her arm put in a cast, and Jimmy shows up to help her out. And he goes over to the crash site to try and collect all the papers. You would think, I mean, this is a man who is experienced in picking up garbage. He should bring some equipment with him and do
yeah.
it right.
Yeah.
He's doing it all wrong.
Nah, he hasn't learned a damn thing.
Yeah.
He's only good at destroying.
Uh-huh.
Like, if you want him to crash Kim's car, he could do that.
Yeah.
He could do that. But putting him back together, not so much.
Kim still seems like she's in shock. She hasn't fully processed everything.
So their relationship has been awkward since late last season.
A little bit, yeah.
And boy, did it really show in this episode where, like, and I think it's very expertly done the way they film it, to where you can't tell if Jimmy isn't sure where he can touch Kim without hurting her, and mm-hmm. whether Kim is showing affection to Jimmy because that's how she feels, or she's trying to go through the motions because she needs... I mean, this relationship is just fucking sad at this point.
Yeah. I don't know. I felt like they came together a little more toward the end, after the relaxathon.
Yeah, but...
During/after.
I have more thoughts on that.
Okay.
But I feel like a kid watching his parents fight before they divorce.
Yeah, it is a little awkward.
I remember the good times. These are not the good times, and I don't see it going... I'm talking with my siblings about the fact that, like, I think what's going to happen to us. I'm very, very worried and disturbed for their relationship.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I've been kind of saying all season, right? I never quite know where Kim stands on Jimmy.
Well, she's hard to read, too.
Yeah, she is.
And she... She punishes herself and keeps things under tightly bottled up.
Oh, yeah. Then we go over to Chuck meeting with the HHM partners. He's laying out all their options for how to, you know, make this problem go away. And then he offers to put it all behind them with a simple handshake. Instead, Howard dismisses everyone else, and he gives Chuck a check for $3 million, which is one of three payments to buy him out of the company. Then he takes him out to the employees who are gathered in the lobby for his farewell announcement. Everyone applauds as he begrudgingly leaves. This is a good scene.
And Howard is stone cold. And I liked the, I'm assuming, the intentional halo framing. That you had to notice that when he's sitting at the head of the table, there's this, like, this woodwork that just is, like, encircles his head like a classic medieval style saint halo.
Uh-huh.
Which I think it reinforces the fact that we're supposed to be on Howard's side here. But Chuck is just unprepared for how done Howard is with his bullshit. Like, he did not listen to anything. And as Howard said, like,
yeah,
I tried to settle this multiple different ways, and I kept on expecting you to do the right thing by the law firm.
And he's clearly not at this point.
No.
Yeah. He's like Howard says, he's got these personal vendettas.
Yeah.
He's suing the company for... just to make his point, essentially. Well, like,
and he thinks that he's got the upper hand because he doesn't, yeah, he can't conceive of a way that this firm would be so done with him,
yeah,
that they would either harm themselves or take a personal loss to do it. And that's how much Howard is just over this.
I mean, the one thing that I think Howard maybe should have done is come to Chuck with some honest ass talk. Like, look, the
episode?
Reputation of the firm is being hurt by you at this point. I didn't feel like it was that, like, he was actually spelling it all out. He was more like trying to convince him to take this sabbatical or retire or whatever in some kind of roundabout way. But I think if he had gone to Chuck maybe and said, look, this is how your actions are harming the company, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he could have pulled Chuck back over, but he's probably so far gone at this point.
And I feel like the unspoken thing is they both came to the table. Howard's thinking, all right, he's thought about this. He sees that I'm right. He's going to take the retirement.
Fool, right? When this letter comes in, planned his retirement for him. Give him a big party.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, what? It's a lawsuit? Never saw that coming.
I think he's like, well, if he has enough time to think about it, and he's going to call, and he's going to sit in front of all these partners, and everyone's affected. And then when he gives that just completely self-effacing, like, you know, just self-serving, not self-effacing, self-serving speech about, oh, wow, you're in a rock and a hard place of my own doing, and I'm going to just, you know, we can just make it all go away. Like, that's when Howard, I mean, it's not just the anger at how Chuck's behaving, but it's also the expectation for him to do the right thing, and he's always done the right thing. He's always suspected this guy, and now this guy is not living up to that ideal. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of betrayal. There's a lot of bitterness. There's a lot of hurt and anger.
Yeah, I wonder what the hell happened to change him that way, you know?
Who, Howard?
No, Chuck. Was it Rebecca leaving him? Was it
the
entanglements
thing
with Jimmy? Like,
what he has suffered from this mental illness. And even in getting treatment for it, he's too arrogant to actually do the, you know, the doctor warned him that if he pushed too hard, something like this would happen.
Right.
And then he does it just to score points and just to, I don't know because I guess they've told us enough that I kind of do know that this all happened when Jimmy got his law degree.
Yeah.
Because when he first came and said, I got my law degree, Chuck was a practicing lawyer and didn't seem to have any single problems with this. Mm-hmm. And then he started going off the deep end. And now how much of that was his wife also leaving him at the same time for professional career?
Right.
I don't know.
Hmm.
But it seems like some combination of him being unable to deal with him not being master of everything. And you know, I guess it's like a reverse of what Howard's feeling. The fact that, like, Chuck thought he had Jimmy figured out, and Jimmy thought he had a way that, like, surely, like, okay, I've learned my lesson. I'm going to do things right. I'm going to do right by Chuck. And it's the weird case where nobody – I mean, there's a lot of mirror imagery in this episode, too. I mean, like, with the glass ceiling and the Wexler McGill. And I kept on thinking when I saw Jimmy – getting punished for ultimately doing the right thing, small lowercase r, lowercase t, by trying to restore this relationship with the old ladies. He gets punished for doing what's good, and he gets disproportionately rewarded for doing bad things.
Sure.
Like, when he's being a shit, the ladies love him, and he's getting paid. When he tries to do right, and it feels like that's the whole relationship with Chuck, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got to change your life. I can't bail you out of these Chicago sunroofs all the time. All right, fine. I'll go and put my nose to the grindstone. I'll do good work for your firm. I'll get a law degree. I'll do all this all my own time without anybody's help. and Chuck turns on him. It's like he's really stuck in this really fucked up upside down world.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And who knows, you know, exactly how much of it is his fault.
Yeah.
And exactly how much is Chuck's fault.
But I was like peak Chuck fuck here. Well, there's a little bit maybe fuck Chuck. There's a little bit more peakery going on. But like his walk of shame. And the fact that I also like however you feel about Howard and the board. I don't understand why you can't put on some kind of face for it for the employees.
Oh, you mean Chuck?
Like, yeah.
Walking out without saying a word?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, he was blindsided by it, so it's tough to, like, you know, fuck you and also get in front of these people and smile.
I guess it's true, but, like, if Howard is blindsided, he deals with it a hell of a lot better than Chuck
does. He does, but he's a man who has cultivated his image to a degree that I don't think Chuck could, even.
Yeah, yeah. So. He's not even aware enough to cultivate that kind of image.
No.
All right.
All right, so Kim wakes up. Jimmy makes her some breakfast of eggs, Gatorade, and Vicodin. And then Jimmy tells her,
champions.
Oh, yeah. He's ready to sublet the office and set her up with a home office. She agrees and reveals some of her guilt about driving with zero sleep.
Six hours of sleep over 7 days.
That's not enough.
You're not a kid anymore either, Kim.
Nope. I don't know. I mean, in this scene, they're both kind of feeling bad about a lot of different things, right? Jimmy is worried about her and feels bad that she could have died and he didn't see it. And he was so self-centered in that moment with his Zafiro Añejo coming in to celebrate that he didn't notice it. But I think he's also, like, in the back of his mind, he's concerned about Chuck, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's got both of those things going on at once, and you can see it on his face.
Yeah, you kind of wonder if Jimmy feels a little guilty because instead of trying to push to Zafiro and Nero, what if he – because he knows how tired Kim's and how frazzled she is. What if he volunteered to drive while she preps in the passenger seat?
Right, yeah.
You had nothing else to fucking do that day, Jimmy.
Yep.
So –
take a couple shots of that tequila and get in the driver's seat.
But also the contrast between Jimmy who, you know, doesn't want to deal with the consequences of his decisions and does so reluctantly to Kim who – you know, takes it all on her own shoulders. Like, hey, I'm an adult. No one forced me to make these choices.
Right.
I wanted to do this, so there you go. I just kept on, like, every interaction I wrote the word awkward because, I mean, I think that's another amazing thing because I kept on thinking, like, in season one, how much great chemistry these people had. And I thought maybe that was a natural chemistry that they had. And now the fact that's just gone. It's gone, like, Sepinwall wrote that, like, if you'd watched this episode or this season, you could be forgiven for not even knowing that they were a couple.
Yeah.
That they were, like, some brother or sister kind of roommate situation because they're just, you know, until they kiss at the end, which also felt like a weird, awkward thing. They're just, like, I mean, they're either faking the chemistry or faking the lack thereof. Either way. Great acting.
Or both. Maybe they're just flat lines on each other.
Yeah, and there's so many, like, I feel like Kim's saying what's actually on her mind, but Jimmy is not. Like, what is Jimmy thinking?
Yeah, it's always tough to get in Jimmy's head, you know? He's always got some kind of game going.
Mm-hmm.
And to get under that, you really have to sort of catch him off guard.
Why is he all about shit-canning the office?
I mean, Kim... I think he wants Kim to relax a bit.
Yeah, but just like Kim couldn't force Jimmy to do what's right by him by getting, you know, by getting rid of the office. I mean, I guess I see that. I obviously look for fairness. Like, okay, you can decide that this is acceptable behavior for someone, but then you have to kind of allow the other person to have that.
Oh, sure.
And like Jimmy just does is like, I'm the only one that can make sacrifices for people. Maybe that's because he doesn't feel like he deserves it. And he feels like he's always trying to atone for some bullshit he's done to people, which is probably right.
Probably.
There, I think I solved it.
Yeah,
I think I solved the character arc.
And then the most menacing thing in this scene, in my opinion, is when Jimmy says, I'm going to fix things.
Right.
Because we know how that goes.
And why doesn't Kim say, please, for the love of God, do you remember how we got into this circumstance?
Right.
This was you fixing things caused a thing with Chuck, caused a thing with us, caused you to lose your license. Yeah, like, that's another thing where I just feel like Kim, even in a drugged up, painful state, would have snapped against that. I don't know.
Yeah, the Gatorade really goes to your head.
I guess it does.
Hector visits the upholstery shop to take a tour, and he seeks out Nacho's dad.
Fuck Hector.
He seeks out Nacho's dad, Manuel, to take the measure of him, I guess. Manuel insults him at first by refusing to take his money, but he gives in after Nacho pleads with him to consider the effect on his family. And then on his way out, Hector tells Nacho that he doesn't trust Manuel.
Where's Pop? This guy.
Yeah, this guy, man.
This guy, I mean, I guess another thing about this season is they've really retconned Don Hector as being a dumbass.
Okay.
Like, he is just a completely incompetent, and I never saw it that way. I always saw him as, like, you know, maybe the because he's so damaged, he didn't know how to, like, raise his kids right. Like, he's what would happen if Sonny took over the family from The Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sonny had a whole bunch of hothead, dumbass kids. But, like, I always thought that he was the Godfather.
Yeah, I mean,
He has not looked good this entire season. And I'm not talking about, you know, the fact that this guy's just way older than he's playing. I'm talking about, like, he just, all of his decisions are amateur, stupid, you know, like a weak person's idea of a strong action, a dumb person's idea of a crafty plot.
That's
can't
the thing,
read
yeah.
the Poppy situation and doesn't can't read how conflicted Nacho is about this. Mm-hmm. He's just terrible at what he's doing.
He is, yeah. And you know, there's that idea that sometimes silent people seem more intelligent or like they have more insight into things.
Right.
And the interesting thing about Hector is he's both silent and he's almost like physically removed from Breaking Bad as well, right? Like, he has such a minor role that you're free to sort of put things like, this is the Godfather on him.
When
we see he doesn't deserve that, right? He's actually just this colossal fuck up.
Yeah. I mean, So your position is that's not a retcon. This is a fully developing of the character.
Yes, definitely. But I totally see why you were, you know, because I was too. I thought, man, he must be somebody important because of the respect that people treat him with. That must mean that he is good at something.
It's
clearly
just weird because it almost, you can't tear down, you can't tear down an arch nemesis without also tearing down their opposition, right?
Sure, yeah.
Like, Gus and Mike look significantly less clever that they outfought this guy.
Sure, yeah.
Like,
I think the real
fucking
thing,
oh.
The real fight I expect is from Juan Bolsa, right? Because that's the one that we see come to the head in the earlier parts of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And then, you know, eventually he gets Hector.
But
too,
even Eladio, like, Eladio's always looked like he's kind of a bit of a dandy.
Yeah.
Doesn't really know what the hell he's doing.
Right. He's just cashing checks and swimming in his pool.
Yeah. I mean,
Bolsa seems like the guy.
His heart attack scene was pretty amazing.
It was, yeah.
But I just feel like, oh, man, they've really kind of made a lot of these characters dumber, which has kind of hurt Gus's legacy a bit.
Are they trying to say something about the drug dealers?
Well,
the people in the drug business?
Yeah, even the best of them can get outfought by an amateur.
Yeah,
like,
true.
Maybe I just overestimated Gus, or probably underestimated how lucky Walter was this whole time. And which I mean, that's the story of Breaking Bad. The fact that all this quote unquote success went to Walt's head and made him a monster. Whereas, you know, I don't know. It's interesting, and I like what it does with Nacho and how desperate of a place it puts him. But I kind of wish that they had made Hector a little bit smarter. Like, it was a little bit tougher of a fight.
Yeah. I really like Nacho's dad here, Manuel.
Yeah.
I think he does a hell of a job, you know, showing his defiance and yet still getting out of the situation alive.
Right.
Essentially.
I mean, there's he comes off looking the best because, like, there's defiance and then there's also carelessly throwing the lives of you and all of your family away.
Yeah.
Which is what this guy can do, so.
Then we go over to Francesca dropping off all the stuff Kim needs to get right back to work, and tells her that she's rearranged all her meetings, so they might still be able to get Gatwood Oil done before the deadline. Kim thinks about it for a second. She's ready to jump back in, but then decides to cancel the meeting and clear her schedule. And she asks for a ride, and they head over to Blockbuster to rent basically every movie on the shelf in 2003. Yep. This has to be the cheapest set to decorate of all times, right? Because
yeah, there's any they're one like $1
DVDs, right?
Well, not only that, but there's so much. There's probably so much Blockbuster shit. Just you know, like every square foot of the United States has like three different Blockbuster signs.
They're desperate, right? Whoever bought the Blockbuster IP is like, yeah, give us $8. You can shoot in there.
Yeah.
No problem. We still got the DVDs in there.
Yeah. I wonder what kind of permission, because Blockbuster still is. There's an article I read on Reddit that like there's still 40 Blockbusters in Alaska.
What?
Makes sense, though.
Yeah, you're not gonna.
What killed Blockbuster is nothing that they did. What killed Blockbuster is streaming video.
Yeah.
So Alaska, I imagine, outside of the very largest cities, has shit broadband infrastructure.
Probably.
So they're still renting DVDs and Blu-rays.
Yeah, makes
but,
sense.
I mean, that's such a crazy thing that Blockbuster was so big 15 years ago, and now they have been utterly destroyed by a change in technology.
I think it's time for Blockbuster to pivot. That's all I'm saying. Like, take those 40 stores and your Alaska profits and move into something different, Blockbuster.
Maybe meth.
Maybe meth, yeah.
Find Jesse's living up there somewhere.
There you go.
You can start it all over again because they need something to do during those 6 months of winter.
Yep.
I don't know. It was really nostalgic because all of my, like, I watched the stuff that I did watch of Lost, like, I watched renting from Blockbuster. Like, that's how I watched all of 24. That's how I, I mean, a lot of, like, my introductory, I think I even watched the first season of Mad Men on Blockbuster.
Wow.
I know I didn't Breaking Bad because I watched that first season. I rented, got it from the library, and then from season two of both of those shows, I watched them live on AMC. But
yeah, I mean, my childhood and teen years are filled with Blockbuster.
I always thought it'd be such a cool job to work at Blockbuster, like a cool teenager job. Like, you know, you just get to wreck. It's probably miserable. You probably turn into some kind of Jack Black asshole working there. But like,
it's the GameStop of 20 years ago, right?
You think it's going to be fun, but it's actually just dealing with a bunch of stupid mean people.
And you think it's got a future, and really it doesn't because of online digital stuff.
Yeah. They did the whole Blockbuster thing upright. Did they talk on the Insider? Because I unfortunately didn't get to listen to the Insider podcast. Did they talk about like acquiring the rights or?
No, they didn't talk about it, but I only got to like the last half hour of the cast. I ran out of time.
Okay.
Did it seem to you like Francesca's really trying to butter Kim up here? Or is she just being concerned?
I just felt Francesca was doing a hell of a job.
She was
like, this is my time to shine and prove that I'm... and she maybe saw the writing on the wall that, like, this is a lot of blows to a company and I don't want to lose my job. But, like, she turned out to be, like, uber competent. Like, I feel like Kim could have snatched victory out of the jaws of defeat now. I mean, that's what's – I thought this was very expertly done and in a very show-not-tell, like her looking at her schedule and the things that she was going to – the amount of the work that she's going to have to do to pull this off and just like, nope, I'm not – this is going to be the flashing red light that I actually stop at. I thought that was really done well.
Yeah,
and it also made Francesca seem very resourceful, which was probably going to turn in and come in handy later. But yeah, I understand why Kim's just like, you know what, fuck it, I'm not going to repeat this. I'm going to actually try, unlike Jimmy or Chuck or anybody else around me. I'm going to try to learn from my mistakes.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Speaking of not learning from your mistakes, Jimmy goes to Chuck's house to apologize for everything that's gone on between them. He's surprised to see that Chuck has the electricity back on. And when Jimmy tells him that he has regrets, Chuck tells him that he's not going to change his behavior, so there's no point in going through the whole song and dance of apologizing. And then he tells Jimmy that he's never mattered much to him, which I think is pretty obviously a lie. But it's devastating to Jimmy. And man, it's just so cold when he says that.
Yeah, and it's also such a projection because, you know, Chuck in stooping to deal with his brother is done all the things he's accused Jimmy of. Like, he's hurt everyone around him. He's hurt his wife, her ex-wife. He's hurt his old business partner. He's hurt his brother. And now he's gonna hurt himself.
Yeah.
And then the ultimate lie, like, anyone that's... And that's the thing, like, I can't believe Jimmy... I'm actually very surprised Jimmy is capable of being wounded by that because it seems like such a self-evident bullshit thing to say. Like, oh, really? The guy who... torched his own career and his own law firm and fucked all this stuff up just to get at me, doesn't give a shit, doesn't think about me.
Right.
Come on.
Yeah, it's I'm actually not sure why Jimmy, you know, just buys that.
In fact, I was waiting for Jimmy to be like, you actually owe me for all this. The one, you didn't get better on your own. It was me humiliating you in public that got you all of these things. Mm-hmm. I've saved your fucking life, you dumb. And it didn't happen.
No,
it didn't. That's the thing. It's like
I think he's blindsided by that comment, and he's unable to respond.
But why?
With anything.
This feels not right to me. This interaction between these two men did not feel genuine. Like from Chuck, it felt genuine. Jimmy, you know, I felt like he got to a place this season where he was tired of taking his guff from Chuck, and mm-hmm. he wasn't going to. And then like Chuck just at the end is like, just, you know, do you know what? Just spare me. And I thought maybe he was going to admit, it's like, you're right. I tried to wrestle in the mud with you and it didn't work. But instead he just fucking reverse judo flipped him and put the blame right back on Jimmy's shoulders. So like, you know, fuck Chuck. This is the the height of hashtag fuck Chuckery to me.
Well, it won't get any higher.
No,
that's for sure.
It steadily will ebb throughout the rest of the episode.
The thing is, though, in this scene, you know, Jimmy's coming to Chuck in a very, in a very vulnerable state, I think. It's tough to say with Jimmy, like, when is he actually vulnerable and
why is he vulnerable?
Because he's there to apologize.
But
why? He's going there with open emotions, and Chuck is stonewalling him and throwing it right back in his face.
But I think that surprises him. I'm not sure why. I also don't understand why Jimmy is picking now to do this.
I mean,
like, does Jimmy like Kim's not? Is it the fact that Kim is not going to blame him, and he feels like he's got this like sadomasochistic need to be blamed and need for people to be mad at him justifiably? So it's like, well, Kim's not going to get the whip out and flog me. I know. I'll go to my brother and demand he do it.
Yeah, I mean. You know, I buy into what Chuck says about Jimmy. I think he does work in these cycles. You know, he does something that he should feel bad about. He feels bad about it, and then he goes and does it again. You know, and he never learns from that mistake. And I don't know. I think he's just here, genuinely feeling bad about it. The emotion is real, like Chuck says. It's just the pattern is not going to change.
I don't know. It's tied into the Kim thing and the fact that Kim is refusing to blame him for any of this stuff. I think that's the thing that Chuck is missing about this, is that this is a pattern that he himself helped establish, the fact that Jimmy is the precocious child that then, you know, steps out of line and gets whipped down and then uses his charm and charisma to get back, and that he needs that punishment phase too somehow. I don't know. Jimmy's pretty sick too.
He is
a pretty sick individual as well.
Yeah.
He can't authentically accept real love, it doesn't seem like.
I'm trying to think who in this show isn't sick, in a way.
Yeah, that's true.
Because you look at Kim, she's just as sick.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a workaholic, right?
Howard's some kind
just
of
burying her
pod
head in work.
Person that, you know,
right, Howard, there's no question about his
sickness. Howard might be the most human person in the whole thing
at this
point.
It's scary, but I think you're right. Yeah.
He's got actual feelings that can be hurt.
Irene. How about Irene?
Yeah, Irene's a good person.
Yeah, she seems genuinely nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Later that night, Chuck wakes up with his illness bothering him, and he goes and turns off all the electricity in his house, but he's still unable to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And this seems like the final straw for Chuck. You know, he's hurt his brother one too many times, and he can't deal with it. He feels the guilt. The illness comes back. It's the same cycle he's been in.
It's a cognitive dissonance, right? The conflict between what he believes, which is I'm the good guy, Jimmy's the bad guy, with his actual actions, which is I'm kind of shitty too.
Yeah, I mean, it's very true what you say when, you know, you talk about the mirroring here. Mm-hmm. Like, Chuck is pointing the finger, accusing Jimmy of being stuck in this cycle when he himself also is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's too blind to see it.
Yeah.
Then Jimmy goes and visits with Irene to deliver a veiled thank you package, I guess, mm-hmm. for settling the case.
Right.
During the course of the meeting, he finds out that the ladies still haven't welcomed her back into the pack. So Jimmy sets about trying to make things right, but he fails.
Yeah. And in fact, just ingratiates himself more with the one that he stabbed in the back is saying you're nice, and the ladies mm-hmm. that he manipulated against Irene are saying he's a saint and she doesn't deserve you
for trying to take that blame.
Pretty bad. Now I do feel like there's a room between this and the nuclear option, which is to get all these women in the same room and try to broker a real... Now, he says, I'm not good at that. And Kim says, play to your strengths. So I don't think...
Right.
But I don't know that he is that bad at it. You know, like if he said that, he would have to still be a little sneaky and con, because like I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is like, why did he have to do the con? Why can't you just sit down and say, I needed the money. You don't know this about me, but I got this just leveled with them all in the same room. And I told her, I gave her those shoes, didn't I? And maybe he thinks that wouldn't work because they would think that he was just stumping for Irene.
Maybe, but I mean, even if it did work, Jimmy's not that guy, right? He tries to con his way out of things. He tries to fix things by conning.
Does that feel like a little show? Like that's a little fictional. Like
no.
Like every once in a while, like I've always said, like sometimes you can hear like the clitter clack of a keyboard or a typewriter in the background when you're watching a television show, and I felt like this, that all the world's a con to Jimmy Prism. I don't know.
Well, I also think it's also, you know, in as much as like you can hear the keyboards clacking, it's also this idea that people don't always do the best thing in their situation, right?
Yeah.
And their faults and their flaws are things that cause them to not do those.
And they got to get him to Saul. Like, I understand where they're trying to move the ultimate arc, and I'm arguing for him essentially to becoming more Jimmy at the end of season 3, which isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like I said in the beginning of the episode, this is all good, but it does feel like there's something just a little bit off. The characters are just... I never felt that way. Even when, like, you know, you got the 737 over ABQ situation, I never felt like those characters were false.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the situation they were in felt contrived, but in that situation, how they all behaved was spot on. Something feels both contrived about the situation and also a little bit about the emotional beats.
Okay. So we go back over to Chuck. He notices that something is still drawing power through the meter, and he calls the electric company to have a look at it. They can't get out till Wednesday, and in the meantime, Chuck decides he's going to investigate the source himself, which spirals out of control until his entire house has been torn apart and the electric meter has been smashed in with a baseball bat. I think this is an excellent scene.
Yeah, and incredible. We haven't mentioned our buddy Dave Porter for a while, but holy shit, a lot of what makes this work is the kind of classic Chuck jazzy background just sliding off the rails as Chuck descends into his madness, and his tics get worse, and he's falling apart, his house is falling apart, the soundtrack is going into crazy town. Do you think the meter was actually spinning?
Well, I hadn't asked that question. I see it spinning, so I assume so, but it could
because
be
because everything I understand about Red, I thought like there's two possibilities. Either this is a telltale heart delusion that like, you know, like or Don Draper, like you know, the rot ain't in your tooth, Dick. Or there he was going to find like an underground weed growing operation that Jimmy forgot about, like, you know, or there was going to be some kind of thing that Mike had set up as some kind of bug or I don't know, because like everything I understand about residential construction is you pull the main circuit breakers and that's it.
Right.
Like it would be very not the code if there's other ways that the electricity are going. So.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like the disc wasn't spinning. He's just lost his damn mind.
It's possible.
In the same way that he imagines he can detect electricity.
Yeah.
What is the step to actually seeing this thing slowly spin? I don't know. That's what I think. I think that this entire episode is his guilt complex going completely delusional.
Okay. I don't know what else to say about that scene other than, man, it's excellent.
Yeah,
and watching this man descend into madness
This is always a great topic thrilling. For Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, because we both respect the Emmy so much. but all over the /r/ Better Call Saul subreddit, everybody's calling for Michael McKean to get an Emmy nomination. I kind of agree.
Mm-hmm. As a supporting actor, sure.
But this is just such a loaded year of television.
Yeah, I think the supporting actor role might be a little more open, because if you look at like The Leftovers or something, like Justin Theroux, Carrie Coon, they both deserve lead actors.
Sure, but not. But you've got, you know, Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah, yeah. He had one like really good scene, I guess.
You also have Glenn Scott. Like, I feel like that Scott Glenn, yeah,
the astronaut.
I feel like that he could get some love, but I just feel like that, man, when you're, I don't disagree, but the way when I disagree is like if you don't consider the whole rest of the field,
sure, yeah,
and the fact that we're only halfway through and it's been this packed, we haven't gone through Game of Thrones yet, we haven't gone through Mr. Robot, we haven't seen a lot of this heavy hitting stuff come, so yeah. I
would
feel
put
like
him in the running for sure.
Certainly deserves a nomination, but what, there's six of them to give out? I don't know. And also, it would be for next year, so don't panic if he gets it. It doesn't get the nod this year.
Yeah, I think he did an incredible job.
And if it is the last, I think that maybe the other thing that'll help him out, if this is the swan song for his character, maybe that would carry some extra weight.
Yeah,
because he's done a lot of things. He's been active in the community a long time. That counts for a lot too.
Yep. So we go over to Nacho, who is waiting in the dark for Hector to show up at a meeting. He sneaks up behind him to try and shoot him, but he doesn't have a shot. Just then, Hector's goons, his other goons, roll up, followed shortly thereafter by Gus and Juan Bolsa, and the meeting begins. Juan tells Hector that he's here to make sure there are no misunderstandings about how the operations are going to be handled now, and also to make sure that he and Gus work things out. Hector gets so angry that he has an episode and collapses, and the paramedics are called, and he's carted away. I had a problem with this scene. Okay. I think this is contrived as fuck.
Wow.
Nacho, why? Why? What are you doing, Nacho?
Uh-huh.
Why are you sneaking up behind Hector to shoot him in the head when you've got this pill operation in play?
I think it's desperate. Like, once he said, I don't trust Poppy, like, I thought you were going to go a different direction.
I'm going that direction, and I'm going this direction.
The message?
The message, like, he doesn't acknowledge that he even ever got a message. He shows up at a meeting that he seemed to have not known about.
Right.
And yet he's following Hector around. He's Hector's goon, like,
you're
head
going to
goon.
Assassinate the head of your family, and you're going to not pay attention to your cell phone?
Right. It's insane. This whole thing is contrived. And then when they show up and they're like, oh, glad to see you got my message.
Yeah.
It just feels so contrived.
Yeah.
I really disliked this setup for this scene.
The scene
in general is okay, but
I agree. Do you know what else?
The setup is terrible.
Do you know what else is terrible?
Huh?
Hector's goon's hairstyle.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think there exists a guy who could pull this off, like Pirate of the Caribbean era Orlando Bloom, for example, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
This guy cannot do it. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the fuck he's thinking with this skull cap ponytail business, but Jesus Christ, it's got to go.
Uh-huh.
You're standing right next to a dude that's got one of the most awesome beards I've ever seen, and you're got this what the fuck on your head.
Yeah. No, it's terrible.
Yeah, you look like a circumcised penis that got botched.
I feel like we
might
have
some kind of weird skin flap is hanging off the back, and the doctor, like, your parents sued the doctor. But what are you going to do? Cut your penis again?
Yeah, no, you just got to leave it.
Yeah, yeah, no, you don't have that problem. Cut that thing off, man.
I feel like we've done this bit in season 2.
He's like a fucking inverted Playboy Friar Tuck. I don't get it. I don't like it. I don't like anything about
it. I'm with you. No, I hate it.
Hector's out of his mind.
He's out of his mind, yeah.
Like I don't know how the Salamanca family fell into its apparent disrepair, but it happened,
yep.
And you lived through it. And at some point, Don Eladio became the boss.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that was the time to stand and fight, not when you got one foot in the grave and the other on a banana peel and Nacho setting you up on an ice rink. Like, the boss can suck me.
That's a great line, though.
It's a great line, but it's just
the way he delivers it was great. I don't think the line's particularly good, but
yeah, no, he swung for his fences with this. And then Gus so the other thing I don't like about this scene is, what the hell is Gus stay, like, why is Gus stay for the ambulance? Because
I think
if Juan Bosa has to get out of there, he has to get out of there double.
Yeah, I'm with you. He should not be seen in this
He's
area.
Handing out awards to EMTs and firefighters and cops. He's going to be recognized. Why are you here at what looks to be a gang meeting in the middle of the fucking night giving this guy CPR?
No, I assumed he was going to take off.
But then when he didn't, like, that seems like shockingly bad attention to detail for the show.
Yeah. I do like that he stays. Well, I don't know. I mean, Bolsa would understand if he just bolted, you know, along with him, because Bolsa's doing the same.
Yeah.
For good reason. Yeah, I don't know. He's doing it clearly for show for Bolsa. Like, this is what he wants. He wants Hector out of the way, but...
But he also doesn't want him to die, because he's saying, don't... Like, the Spanish he's saying is, don't you die on me, cabrón, which is somewhere between son of a bitch, dumbass, motherfucker. Like he doesn't want it, like, yeah, bullet's too good for Hector. Slipping into a coma is way too good for him.
Gotcha.
Like, Gus is trying to spite resurrect him, which I thought was interesting, but I don't feel like Gus actually stays there. I feel like Gus gives Nacho a 1-minute employee training manual on how to do CPR and then bounces, because he cannot be seen there. He cannot be seen there by the authorities.
Yeah, I mean... You know, this is also, like, the perfect thing to have happen for Gus. You know, he doesn't want him to die, but he does want him out of the way. And it happens in a way that he couldn't possibly have been involved with. We know he wasn't. And it happens in front of Bolsa, who can back him up to Don Eladio, right? I did not take him out. Nothing nefarious went on here.
Yeah, yeah, right.
He just collapsed. And I wonder, Bolsa could say,
I wonder what the cousins think about all this. Because, like, you know, what happens when Tuco gets out of prison and he calls the cousins and they're like, hey, you know, this is all kind of some crazy coincidental stuff. And or maybe they think, hey, my uncle went a little crazy. He stepped up to the big boss and he shouldn't have done that. I don't know. But there's such loose cannons. And their leash is held so firmly by the cartel, the fact that they wouldn't have any problem with the way their uncle's being treated. If he's having a problem with it, I don't know. Like, why doesn't he call? Like, I feel like the way they've portrayed Don Eladio, that Hector calls the cousins and sets them off the chain, there's no way Eladio outfights him. Like, some of the world building feels a little creaky, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it depends on, I guess, how much input Hector's going to have here going forward. It's tough to say, but yeah, I'm with you.
Because I wonder, like, do you think the plan was that Hector was going to have him just blast, Don Bolsa and Gus? Because that feels like
possibly.
That's what they were going to do. And then it's a war. Can he win that war? He must have felt like he could have.
I don't know. I mean, at some point, Gus certainly thinks he can.
Yeah.
So...
Well, my money's on Gus smarter. Again. Yeah, like I said, like, I feel like Gus can outfight all of it. And he did. He did.
He
so.
Did. Yeah. Let's talk about Gus for a second. He seems to be suspiciously eyeing Nacho and the pills at the end of this scene. And I don't really know why, other than
I think
Gus is preternaturally linked into what's happening.
Yeah, no, I think that Gus is a sharp... I buy that Gus is a sharp enough cookie that he sees Nacho off in the margins doing some sleight of hand with these pills on the ground.
Think so.
And he suspects that, he suspects foul play. Now, I'm actually, so what do you think Gus is mad at Nacho?
No, I
because
think
there's
he's
a whole
just
thread on
sizing
the,
up the situation.
There's a whole thread on a subreddit where people were saying, oh man, Gus is going to be mad at Nacho because he thinks he deserves worse than death, and here's not. And I'm like, I feel like Gus would completely understand Nacho being afraid for his dad and trying to do this thing. And he
absolutely
would see it as smart and resourceful.
A man who tells Mike, I'm not going to take money from your family. I'm not going to let your dad get killed.
And again,
this,
I don't
know
what he feels like in his heart of hearts, but the image he's portraying and is consistent is that he has got this understanding and he values smart and resourceful people. And that served him well up until he met one Walter White.
Right, and that's... I think this
and that's
this
the exception
season,
that proves the rule, I guess.
Right, this series is shining a light on the relationship of Gus and Walter White in a way that I didn't think needed or that could even be done. Because you think forward, I guess, to when he threatens Holly, right? Like,
right.
I don't think this man, like, Walter White must have drove him crazy.
And
to make that threat.
Yeah, when you watch, like, how much he goes wishy-washy between, get rid of this, and
right.
keeps altering the
his
the
best
deals
laid plans
and,
every time.
And Gus is trying to roll with him and, like, accepting all the lies he's told. And the,
yeah.
But, you can see that, like, Gus is like, I've got a system. Yeah. I find these smart, resourceful people. They're not really career criminals. They don't think like criminals. And everything's safe. And everything's a well-oiled machine. And then he meets Walter White, and it blows his model to hell.
Sure does.
To hell.
Yep.
So you're right. I didn't expect or need this, but I do appreciate that dimension. It shows just what a fucking wild card Walter White is.
Yep. Jimmy arrives at Kim's place, is it their place now?
Seems
or is he just
like
staying
it.
With Kim? For,
I mean, his place is the laundry closet in a Vietnamese nail parlor.
Yeah, did he get that place back after the office shut down?
I don't think. I think he's like, the tastefully done IKEA decoration with the... were those style backsplashes, those multicolored glass? I feel like that's a little ahead of the fashion curve. Like really tiny strips of multicolored glass for the backsplash behind.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I feel like that's something that was in the 2010s.
Yeah.
But Kim's rocking it back in 2003.
I think the Property Brothers invented that.
Did they?
Pretty sure, yeah.
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 Take $15 of the Home Depot and turn it into $1,500 of, ooh, wow, look at backsplash. Right. I was stuck at necessity. It's like, I feel like that's the one thing, because you look around modern kitchens, and like, I feel like there's a lot of the stuff is kind of very classic, but those backsplashes scream dated in 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
Like the 70s kitchens, what the hell were they thinking with the paisley linoleum and the wood panels
and
the harvest fucking gold and the chef. Like they were just lost their goddamn minds. I feel like a lot of this stuff is going to stand the test of time, but the backsplashes already a bit dated.
Could be right. I guess when Chuck is going at the backsplash.
I feel like I pissed off a lot of people with a lot of kitchens by saying that. I'm just saying that backsplash might be the harvest gold of the 2020s.
I'm just saying Chuck knew it. Chuck knew it.
Yeah?
He was ahead of his time. He started
peeling that
thing out.
Burn it all down.
Yep. Where was I? Oh, yeah. He arrives at Kim's place just in time to continue the relaxathon. She decides they're going to watch To Kill a Mockingbird, and she asks about Irene, and Jimmy realizes what he has to do. Though he doesn't want to do it, because she mentions, you know, sometimes you got to play to your strengths, with which he says is tearing things down. So he's going to go tear himself down in front of them.
I got to ask your opinion on two things.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on double dipping Doritos into cheese and salsa?
As long as you eat the whole Dorito, I'm cool with that.
Okay.
Just don't like dip, bite, dip.
Kim would be a real fan of the Dorito Loco craze that's swept Taco Bell.
Uh-huh.
See, I'm not a fan, so I'm like, I felt like I was a little queasy at the idea of dipping Doritos into cheese sauce and then salsa.
I guess you got to have your Dorito bottle of cheese and your like Tostito bottle of cheese, because I don't want to like dip into a bottle of cheese with the Dorito dust in it if I'm not eating Doritos with it. Right, because the dust has got to come off.
It's going to contaminate fly style for you.
Right, yeah. Okay. It would drive me insane.
Sure, I get that. Second thing... We touched on this a little bit, but I cannot believe that they're playing off that Kim knew the details of the old lady scam and then she's fine with it. Now, it's possible that I'm reading too much into this and that Vince Gilligan would say, oh, Aaron, does she really know? She knows what this version of Jimmy's told, which is maybe that he applied some pressure or maybe... But even then, I feel like she'd be like, are you an idiot? This is your formal counsel, and you're giving quasi-legal advice that's got a bare bit of corporate, a little bit of veil between it.
Mm-hmm.
I was blown away that they just did the Kim. I don't know whether it's the Vicodin or what, but Kim just doesn't give a shit that Jimmy's scamming these old ladies for millions of dollars of his own benefit. She's Atticus Finch. I get that he's not, but damn.
Right.
And then say, play to your strength?
Yeah. What
if he builds a bomb and blows up the nursing home, Walter White style?
Right.
Ding, ding.
Yeah. I feel you on that. I also think, like, the show is telling me that they have a opinion on where this particular action lies on the legal spectrum. Because Erin herself doesn't seem to say, like, this is borderline gonna get you, you know, your license suspended permanently or get you completely disbarred. She just, like, is appalled at the ethics of it, essentially, but the morality of it.
That's where I thought Kim would be. I wouldn't think Kim would be impressed. Like, I can't believe you've successfully navigated the thin line between illegal and immoral way to go, Jimmy.
Right, right. But what I'm saying is, like, the showrunners clearly have an idea of that because they've never even brought up the topic of, is this illegal?
Okay, that's fine. I just feel like they've done a very poor job of preparing me for this radical swing of Kim's behavior when she's... I mean, maybe that's the thing, that, like, she grew up idolizing Atticus Finch. She didn't become Atticus Finch, so she's a little bit jaded at this point, and she's loopy on drugs. But I'm shocked. I thought that would be the ultimate breaking point of their relationship.
Yeah.
And no, now I mean, it's...
The way it seemed in season two, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe she's just like, this is like a full-on, like, psychologically abusive relationship that she's just... She's been, the frog has been boiled in the water. Jimmy just keeps turning up the degrees of fucked upness, and she accepts it.
Yeah, could be.
I don't know. I
feel like the way that they could maybe have brought people like you on board a little bit more, or people like me even, because I kind of agree with you, is to maybe spell it out a little bit more. Like, why would the show think this is not illegal?
Yeah, like, what is...
Why would Kim be on board with this ever?
Kim is the type of person that even with a hashtag fuck Chuck situation, she feels guilty about manipulating the system for her own benefit, even though very arguably, Chuck brought all that to himself and she's just doing her job. Mm-hmm. Felt guilty about Howard, so he has to write a check to him, but she's just cool with Jimmy manipulating these little... I mean, maybe...
They needed another scene to tell us why.
Maybe, like, if there was a scene that's on the cutting room floor where Jimmy and her have a conversation about the fact that they can't believe that the law firm is angling for more money when you've got the advanced age of this client and how much they can actually benefit from that versus how, you know, like that could have been like, okay. And then maybe Jimmy shades the truth about, like, I'm just trying to tell the ladies the truth, and it kind of blew, it got away from me, Kim. But it looks like she just turns a blind eye to it, and I didn't like that.
Yep. Then we go over to Jimmy hosting hot yoga. He's enacting his idea.
Is this hot yoga?
His plan. Or not hot yoga.
Oh.
Chair yoga. Sorry.
Okay. The hot yoga is where they hot box you and
they
just do yoga.
Well,
not hot box.
Not hot box in that sense. But yes, the sauna, they do hot box you.
Yeah.
In the middle of it, Aaron shows up and takes him outside to chew him out about the settlement. And let's say accidentally over the speakers connected to the headset he's wearing, the ladies hear him unremorsefully explaining how he built up and exploited the trust of Irene and the others of them to make a bunch of money from the settlement.
Accidentally on purpose.
Right.
Because I was shocked at how many people on some of the show, like, after show subreddit threads were like, I can't believe Jimmy did that accidentally, or, like, completely missed the fact that this was all a scam.
I know, man. Wow.
Okay. And I don't think these people are stupid. I think these people are playing with their cell phones while they're watching the television.
Yeah, totally.
I see that, and that's what's starting to drive me crazy about these show threads is, like, all these people that clearly distractedly watch this and miss, like, super important points of the show.
Yeah.
Like, again, I don't think they're dumb. I just think they're not paying attention, and these shows you have to pay attention. So, you know, why do I need four threads about people wondering what Jimmy's... I don't know. It drives me crazy.
Sometimes I'm not playing with my phone and I still miss stuff. What's my excuse?
Just, I don't know, but maybe rewind it.
I guess I'm just dumb. I guess I'm just dumb. So when he returns to chair yoga, Irene and the other ladies have been reunited by their anger at him, and they all leave.
Yep.
And then Jimmy goes out and thanks Aaron for the role she played in the ruse. It's a great scene, you know? I
like seeing Aaron Brill again. I know you hate
it. I like seeing... It's a fun character.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's an annoying character, but intentionally so, and kind of tongue-in-cheekly so.
Would you say she's the Bogdan, the eyebrows of this series?
Yeah, totally.
Like, she's very colorful, very distinctive, pain in the ass to the protagonist.
Right.
And hopefully Jimmy will scam a car wash out of her before everything's said and done.
Yeah. I mean, the scene is so cringeworthy, right? It's like, God, I don't want to see Jimmy destroy his own reputation, because I think clearly at some point he was trying to help these elderly folk, but now he's got himself into a situation where he has to destroy himself just to help
I don't know
out.
If he does. And the other thing is, like, he also, like, all that's not forgiven, because these ladies are not back to square one.
Sure.
Their relationship's repaired, but now they have to be that now they have to deal with the fact that they've been victimized by someone they trusted and super taken advantage of, and they've kind of lived up to some of these elderly stereotypes, and that can't be good for one's self-esteem.
Sure.
But this is like, how many years do these people have left in their golden years, and Jimmy has put an undue amount of stress and misery into their life?
Yeah.
And then spare me the emails otherwise. Like, I got a couple was like, hey, I think you guys are being a little hard. No, no, we're not.
No, definitely.
Go hang out at a nursing home for even a week.
Yeah.
And then tell me that those people need more misery in their life.
I mean, the effects on the elderly in a nursing home type scenario would be far more enormous, I think, than anyone else, because they're stuck in this micro ecosystem, right?
Yeah.
Where they have no option. They're not going to escape it. And if it goes bad, it's just fucked up for the rest of their life till they die.
Yeah. Like, do you know how bad fucking high school and junior high sucked when you were the odd person out? Like, maybe you got the privilege of not experiencing that. It sucks really bad.
For sure. Yeah.
The thing that you kind of cling to is things will get better. Well, if you're crapping your pants and going, your kidneys are in dialysis and late stage failure and your kids aren't coming. Jimmy's a shit, and any emails to the contrary will be summary deleted.
There's less risk
your
of swirly,
opinion is noted,
I guess.
It has been rejected by this podcast, both parties.
All right, glad we got that clear.
Yes.
All right, let's move on to Jimmy, Kim, and Francesca packing up the last of the stuff in the office. Francesca heads out after being let go. Jimmy throws out his Rolodex because it's full of seniors who absolutely hate him now. And then they admire the wall one last time before leaving the office for good. I really hate to see Francesca go. I think she's awesome.
She's not going.
We know she's not going for good, obviously.
And I like this scene because it does such a contrast to what we know she becomes later on. And the fact that she's like, oh, good, I'll be your first call. Great. I kind of can't wait to see that happen. I don't know. She's like the person ultimately. Like, is she one of the only ones in Breaking Bad history that gets one over on Walter White and suffers no consequence? She straight up extorts him for like five figures over a door that he broke, and never faces. Like, she's the ultimate champion of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, she wins.
Gus can't do that.
Nope.
Skyler White can't do that. The freaking neo-Nazis can't do that. No. They all get brought before him.
It's true.
Brought low. Francesca's standing high. Yep. Does she get disappeared?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because it feels like she'd have a lot of splaining to do.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she doesn't get to leave with her head held high.
Maybe not. But she does here, and I don't know how soon she'll be back, but we know eventually she does come back, so that's nice. And hearing, Jimmy talk about, I'm going to need a whole new business model when I get my license back is pretty funny. They keep playing with us, right? They keep teasing this idea of Jimmy becoming Saul. They brought us to the brink last episode at fall.
Right.
Everybody said, this is the moment. Now he's been
They're
brought back again.
Again.
But they also do it with a teaser of, I'm going to need a new business model, which I think is pretty funny.
Yeah. Well, and it's also kind of a return to his old business model, because he started out in criminal law. Public defender.
Right.
He's doing that for less pro bono and more pro bone you.
Uh-huh.
Do you think... Here's now that we're at the end of the season, before we go into like a scene that I don't think either one of us can say anything bad about... I said this four episodes ago, that I would be very chagrined if they make it out of the season. I don't see a one goddamn Saul Goodman production commercial. Mm-hmm. We got nothing but the original. I feel like that's such a huge missed opportunity.
You mean for his law firm, right?
No.
Because he has made Saul Goodman productions.
I'm talking about, like, I didn't see any of the Sklar brothers. I didn't see any of the Tampico furniture. I didn't see any fun Saul Goodman low-budget commercials this season.
That's not true.
What did we see?
Yeah, we saw the one that the commercial he makes for commercials.
That's what I'm saying. That's the only one. And we said, if that's it, we don't, that's what I said, that if I didn't see any more, then they took such a fun concept and really, really missed the ball on delivering it.
Are they saving it all up? I don't know, man. I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, you're certainly right. We didn't see any more after that.
I thought that was a missed opportunity for some Saul Goodman fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really just saw the filming of them.
Yeah, and I just don't know that we're going to get much Saul Goodman fun the rest of the series. So,
okay.
That would be something we're doing a wrap-up podcast, yeah?
Yeah.
That's something I definitely want to talk about in a wrap-up podcast.
Okay.
What room does Saul Goodman have in Jimmy McGill's world?
Yeah. Then we go over to Chuck.
Thing. Yep. Kiss on the mouth. What is that telling us? Did you feel like that? That felt like the least awkward interaction about the relationship.
Yeah, I'm so up in the air on these two. I really don't know. Same here. Couldn't tell you.
Same here.
Kim might hate his guts. She might love him. I don't know.
That's a masterful way of staying on that sitting on the fence of possibilities, so they can punt that the next season and right. have or it's a little bit of a dodge, or it's a little bit of a muddled character point.
Yeah, not sure. This next scene doesn't seem very muddled, other mm-hmm. than maybe the murky, inky blackness. But later that night, Chuck's sitting in his house a house that is as devastated as he is, honestly. Mm-hmm. He's back to the lantern, and it's sitting on a stack of newspapers on the desk in front of him. He's kicking the table. He's inching the lantern toward the edge. One final kick sends it crashing to the floor, and then the house burns down around him. Chuck's dead, right?
I mean, as we've already discussed, the Villa gang collectively will have some splaining to do, and I'm not saying they can't explain their way out of it. They can't, you know, maybe they come into our chair yoga class with their mics on, and all's forgiven. Who knows? But yeah, I think that this scene is a man who is angry and sad and disgusted and wants to die.
Yeah.
And has slowly but surely cut off all of his effective support and coping mechanisms right. and is left with this.
It's interesting because we just watched Shutter Island not too long ago, and I feel like the ending of this episode is very similar to that.
Yeah.
Where it's a man kind of realizing his illness and making a choice to not live with it. I don't know if it's exactly the same. I'm not sure how much insight Chuck has into himself.
I know what you're saying, yeah. And without half, you know,
but clearly this is intentional, right? He's sitting there kicking his desk. He's looking at the lantern. He knows what he's about to do.
Yeah, and he's got tears in his eyes, and he's sitting there like he doesn't. I mean, it's a little bit of Flowers of Algernon. There is like the guy has seen this side of sanity, and now he sees that he's slipping back into it. And what does he have to fight for? Like I want this house to be full of music. I want all my friends and colleagues to have this big, massive party, and that's never going to happen because he's burnt all of those bridges.
Yeah.
He's got no friends. He has no family. His ex-wife is all skeeved out by all this. Howard's done all the.
Yep.
He's got nothing left.
Yep. So he decides to end it.
Yeah. Like, you know, again, I don't think suicide's a good option for people. I feel like that's your brain not working right, and you need to get that looked into. Tell someone and get some professional help if you're feeling that way. But and also I feel like it's a little bit of fuck check too, because I feel like in the back of his mind some of this is I'm going to show Jimmy. Introduce this idea of what a terrible idea it is to have this lamp on all these things, and I'm going to my last interaction is this bad, and now I'm going to kill myself. There's a little bit of vindictiveness to it. One final thought: is there any possibility Jimmy gets in trouble for this?
I can't see how.
I mean,
you look at the state of Chuck's house.
But if the investigators go in there and they see all this obvious signs of arson, and his, you know, Chuck's professional therapist is saying he's made such great progress. Howard testifies that, like, last time I saw him, he was fine with electricity. And, you know, we've got this brother who's angry and was rejected and was seen by the neighbors sneaking into the house or, like, forcing his way in the house again that day. I can see a little bit of how this would look really bad for Jimmy.
It could. If I were Jimmy defending myself against a claim, I'd probably say he made this call to the electric company the same day.
True.
He canceled his appointment with his psychologist, or psychiatrist. I don't know which is which. But there are certainly some signs that he was cracking there at the very end.
That's true.
And you look at the state of his house, right? Like, the fire is not going to erase the holes in the walls, the everything being torn down. It depends on, does this thing burn totally to the ground?
I guess my thought was that Jimmy went over there, killed his brother, and did all this to cover up the crime.
Really?
That's where I was going with it.
Yeah.
The fact you get there and, like, my God, the house is a wreck. There's all this shit on the lawn. There's all this burnt, and there's a guy that just set himself on fire, like that doesn't seem consistent with the story that his trajectory that his life was going in. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't feel like that's what they're trying to suggest.
I don't think they're going to go there. No.
But it's certainly an option that the writing room could take if they wanted to.
I think it's probably going to be more how does he deal with the emotional fallout of it?
I think so too.
Than some kind of like plot that he gets caught up in.
Yeah.
And I wanted to gauge your interest on this. What do you think about a year time jump?
I think that's exactly what's going to happen.
You think so?
I think we're going to deal with the very, like Jim and Kimmy are going to be very on the rocks. Jimmy is going to be very angry and surly and you know, desperate. And he's,
and he's going to feel super guilty about his brother.
The big question is, do they get one more season or two? Because they haven't been extended yet, which is odd. Vince Gilligan says the next season's he was on an interview today. Next season's a sure thing. I just don't know when it's going to be.
Yeah,
And I wonder if they're going to get one more season or two. And if they get one more season, I really hope that they do like a 3 or 4 episode arc for Saul, and then they finish out with post Breaking Bad Gene. Because one of the things I want to talk about in the wrap-up podcast, I'm going to try not to talk about now, is I don't know how much I really want to see Saul at this point. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, I need at least a season or two of Saul. Like, do you?
Yeah.
Do you? That's just not how – that doesn't fit the tone and spirit of what they're doing at the show. Like, that's what we thought we were getting, but we got was the tragedy of Jimmy McGill.
Right.
And, you know, even Walter White got a little bit of redemption at the end. Jimmy is not Walter White, so – I would like to expect him to see a little bit of redemption at the end.
Yeah. I don't know. Anything else to say about this episode other than, you know, that excellent final scene?
Were you, so I want to probe a little bit more into your thoughts. Were you actually surprised that he burnt, that he died, or are you surprised he committed suicide?
I'm surprised that he committed suicide.
Okay. Because I felt like everything, as soon as they, like, the thing was called Lantern, we kind of called that last week, and when they opened up with it zooming in on the intense sunlight heat of it, I'm like, oh, he's going to have a relapse. And at first, when it looked like he was asleep and he had this rhythmic jerk like that, I thought they were trying to suggest that that's part of the tic that he was developing. And I'm like, oh, he's going to die in his sleep. But then with his eyes, like, so I guess the only shock was that it was self-inflicted.
But that's the thing where I feel silly, because this is a show where they've shown someone overdosing on drugs and someone in a position to save them and not doing it. This is a show where they've shown a kid melted in acid. Like,
it gets dark.
This series gets really dark, and I didn't see it coming. Mm-hmm. I still did not see it coming, even though I totally should have.
Do you know there's a subreddit called Fuck Chuck?
Is there?
It's a good read today, because it's a whole bunch of people like trying to do some Rick Astley style Rick rolling with like, oh, you know, it's like, I hope we can all admit that we feel bad about, and then in the body of the text, it's like some completely opposite. Or, you know, everyone says this episode had a dark ending, but, and then the body is, I feel like Chuck was very bright at the end.
Nice.
And then also, like, my favorite one is like, Chuck got fired twice this episode. Hashtag fuck Chuck.
The internet.
But also, bravo, Michael McKean.
Yeah.
You really.
Fantastic.
You really played a Joffrey level, hateable, punchable bastard. And hats off to you. And you did it without cross-bolting prostitutes.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive that I hate you that much. And you didn't really do anything. Bald Move is sponsored by Bald Move, as it is almost every week, and you can help out with that.
They're so gracious.
They are.
You know, every week they come back sponsor us.
The Bald Move Foundation has been with us since the beginning, really. And you can find out more about the good work these people do supporting borderline homeless podcasters at club.baldmove.com. And like NPR and PBS before, you get you know, we don't have any tote bags. We don't have any coffee mugs. Actually, that's not true. Merch.baldmove.com. But what we do have is ad-free feeds. We got bonus content like quips and a Lunch with the Jim and Aaron, which is a general interest discussion podcast. One of the things that came out of the survey I've been bugging you about is people want to hear us talking about general. We do it. Yeah. And you can have it by joining the club at club.baldmove.com. All these great features, plus the satisfaction of knowing you're keeping us off the street. You're keeping us from descending into the Faces of Meth version of Michael McKean. And who you'd be, I don't know, the director kid, the baby JJ?
The director? Oh, I'm trying to think of like, I'd slip into that role pretty easily.
What your starting face and what your ending face would be.
Right. Would I be a Spooge? Is that his name?
Spooge.
Would I just slip right into Spooge mode?
Well, that is a slide. That is a true Face of Meth slide. You have the power to keep us from that fate by going to club.baldmove.com. We could use your support. Also want to give a shout out to not an advertiser, but a new content partner, TVTime.com. You can go to the App Store on iPhone or Android, download their app, TV Time. And it's actually a really cool tool. You can sign up for all the shows that you are following, and it'll keep track of the latest information about when those seasons debut. Mm-hmm. It also plugs you into fan communities, so you can see people's reactions. You can also easily navigate. Like, the one of the reasons they partnered with us is that we provide podcasts. So, like, if you like an episode of television, you can tab over to see other takes and other reactions, and our podcast is listed for the shows that we do. And it's a way for us to get a little bit more traffic. But I kind of think the tool is cool because we used to spend a lot of time maintaining a spreadsheet of when shows are coming back and all that. And now we can just plug all this stuff in and it'll tell us. It says, you know, Game of Thrones, 23 days, Mr. Robot, 105 days away. And we get alerts when shows get scheduled and new things get released.
Yeah, I think this can be my new default way to keep track of all my shows.
The other horrifying thing is it tells you how much time that you spend watching television.
Yeah, that's the one thing I didn't want it to do. But it does.
I started, like, it's already a scary total of my life, and I haven't even got like half the shows that I've that I've put in here. It's also probably going to be really cool for like Baldi's time when we do the Bald Move Awards. Like, yeah, that's something else. We keep a spreadsheet of like our thoughts and opinions on that stuff. Well, now it all tracks it. So if you're a big fan of TV, I think it's worth checking out because you can get a lot of extra meta information about your television and kind of keep your schedule straight and see what stuff is looking forward to. And it's also a great way to discover new stuff because, like, I find myself just being surprised by trailers on Netflix and just, you know, happenstance by seeing commercials or, you know, going to having Maria Munoz tell me what's coming out next at the movie theater.
Yeah.
Well, now TV Time is going to scoop them all because they got all that stuff collected in one place and a great way to discover new stuff. So check it out, TVTime.com or in the App Store, search for TV Time. I think you'll like it. And it's got Bald Move stuff on it. What more can you say?
All right. What about feedback?
We have a lot. We have a lot of feedback, twice as much as a normal amount.
Bettercastsaul@baldmove.com
if you want to send in, because we are having a wrap-up podcast next week. This time, we're going to come back to put a bow on the season, see how we maybe our opinions will change over the season as a whole as we read more stuff about it and get other opinions. And what I'm really wanting to see is how we feel about the next few seasons, how many seasons we want, how much Better Call Saul do we want? What are we hoping to see? And also kind of like if you also got like a, if you think that I'm full of shit about being, I don't think I'm being excessively down on this season. But if you think, if you want to call bullshit on that, like I'm definitely open to being talked out of some of these, you know, things I'm calling bullshit on. Because I don't go into, you know, wanting to have problems with the show. So let's get on with it. Better Cast Saul at baldmove.com. Josh M., we got a medical corner up front.
Oh, boy.
I just felt I needed to chime in regards to your nitroglycerin question since I am a pharmacist. Nitroglycerin comes in a sublingual tablet and an oral capsule. Sublingual, of course, means under the tongue. The oral capsules are extended release and have been discontinued from the market, so they'd have been pointless for acute angina or chest pain. The nitroglycerin is taken under the tongue when having chest pain because it's readily absorbed through the mucosal lining of the mouth. If it was swallowed, it would be quickly metabolized by stomach enzymes and be virtually ineffective. Nitroglycerin is primarily used for chest pain, but also helps secondarily with vasodilation of the arteries and veins, which can be extremely beneficial when having a heart attack. The ibuprofen is put in a capsule as an anti-inflammatory, which does have some aspirin-like properties in regards to thinning the blood, which could possibly be beneficial during a heart attack, but nothing compared to nitroglycerin. I found it humorous if they went this route in presenting nitroglycerin, but it doesn't take away from the riveting scenes between Nacho and Don Hector.
I think you should have put laxatives in the pills just to make it extra an extra funny death.
It's just full of like Visine or something.
Right.
Oh man, that would be hilarious. So I didn't want to so Gunner, who is a medical student. He talked about all that, too. In fact, we had, like, Barry, our old pal Barry Carter chime in. We had a bunch of doctors that said the same
Barry
thing.
Barry Goodman. Who's this Barry Carter you're talking of?
Barry Goodman, sorry. Yeah. Dr. Carter, whatever. I've got – he's Jay-Z. He's actually Jay-Z. just blew his cover wide open. Gunner, a medical student, says, I'm trying to figure out is how he ends up in his wheelchair, which seems to imply that he has a stroke or some other form of neurological damage. A heart attack wouldn't give him the symptoms he shows in Breaking Bad's timeline, so either – One, someone else gives him the extreme disability. Two, heart attack leads to an arrhythmia, which allows a clot to form, which is then thrown into his brain, causing a stroke. Three, the Villa Gang doesn't know the difference, and for storytelling purposes, yeah. it probably doesn't matter. Or four, maybe there's a perfectly good medical link between the heart attack and someone displaying Uncle Tio's extreme level disability, and I just need to study more. I think it's a little bit of two with a lot of three. Mm-hmm. Because one thing, if you've watched a Mythbusters episode that deals with Breaking Bad, you will find out that Vince Gilligan is not quite dots his I's and crosses his T's when it comes to the chemistry on display that Walter, like, all the way from how acid can dissolve a body to formulated mercury?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that he blows up to.
Fulminated
mercury, yeah. That's what it is. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't really work, or if it does work, it's not nearly as impressive or quick as it's shown in the and it doesn't matter because it's a cool idea and it sounds kind of right. Uh-huh. So I feel like they kind of lean on the rule of cool, and I'm not going to, like, the many criticisms I had of this season, this whole nitroglycerin, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know about the sublingual and I didn't know about the capsules and extended. I just know that sometimes when people have a heart attack, they take some medicine and it helps out.
Right.
And
they take the same view on the law too, right?
Right.
Even though this is at its core about the law.
Sure.
They don't care.
Like
that
if we
much.
Were covering ER, we'd probably have a medical corner every week where the doctors would bitch and moan about how bad they do. So. I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. I don't expect Vince to be an expert. Although, like, I do think they should sweat the details wherever they can, but that's not a problem for me. I understand if it's a problem, especially if you're a medical professional or if, like, man, it seems like if you really had a bad time if you're a chemist watching the original Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
So there's our medical corner. Brian F., the answer is always the good stuff. I'm calling it right now. Kim becomes Wendy.
All right.
That is the hottest of takes, because if you squint, you can almost see like a Faces of Meth progression.
Yeah.
Gets a little bit busted up in the accident. She gets addicted to, Vicodin.
Yep.
And then she turns on the meth and that gets expensive because her and Jimmy lose their legal profession. Like, yeah, I can almost see see that kind of Face of Meth progression.
Yeah.
Very. Oh, man. What if?
I think somebody should make a faked gif of like the morph from Kim to Wendy.
Well, I know you haven't seen it yet, but this season of House of Cards, they have this app where they take like that you can take two images and kind of blend them together, and they do that with Francis and Claire, and they do it with hilariously Claire and Petrov, which is the Putin stand-in.
Wow.
I bet you could put in Ray Seahorn and then whoever the lady that played Wendy and slide that back. And I bet it tracks pretty good.
Probably.
If you guys want, someone wants to do that for me, I will certainly post it on the show notes next week. I might even do it myself. We're our schedule's clearing out a little bit next week. So, Stee B, which I might be mispronouncing. I tried to get clarification on that before but it's STE. I don't know how sweet. It's Sweet B.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm pretty sure Jimmy must have read To Kill a Mockingbird at some stage, because even if he doesn't really identify with Atticus Finch, the book is where he got his accidental microphone idea from. In the book, Scout is eavesdropping on Atticus' conversation with a friend about the situation with Tom in the upcoming trial. Atticus knows she is listening, but Scout doesn't know that he knows. So when Atticus says something along the lines of, "I sure hope Scout doesn't do anything silly and listens to her old man when things get rough," he knows it will have more of an impact on her, and she's more likely to take that advice. In the book, an older version of Scout reminisces about the conversation in the first person and is full of respect for Atticus's wisdom in using this method. I thought it was an amazing touch by the Villa Gang, and I'm sure it will have not gone unnoticed, but I'm 100% sure it's the angle they were going for, and for me is the reason why I absolutely love Better Call Saul. For me, it surpassed Breaking Bad now for its genius. That is
a bold claim.
Perhaps too high praise.
Yeah, I would say. I'm not sure that Saul has ever read it, but I can tell you who has read it. The writers of this show.
Yes.
Yeah.
And even if he backed into that, like, that's more of a chuck, like, that still kind of makes sense. And also,
yeah.
That is, like, did you read To Kill a Mockingbird? Mm-hmm. How did you get out of
I was homeschooled in high school.
Oh,
so
that's right.
I didn't do a lot of the typical
That's one of the books
stuff.
Where they really that and like Tale of Two Cities
right.
and, you know, Scarlet Letter, The Crucible. Like there's a couple of Americana books that they really crammed down one's throat.
Yeah, so I've heard.
So that's one of the ones I actually liked. I really liked the Kill a Mockingbird. Another thing I'd like to talk about on the wrap-up podcast is compare and contrast Breaking Bad to Better Call Saul in their seasons three. Because I don't think they unfavorably compare.
That was the season three in Breaking Bad was the rise of Gus.
It was the rise, you know? Yeah.
The introduction of Gus, should I say.
Yeah.
Well, and the rise of Walt in Gus's empire.
It was Gus turning from benevolent benefactor to malevolent archvillain.
Yeah. Yeah, because he had this menace of Walter White.
And the thing is, like, man, if you compare Chuck setting himself on fire to Jesse blowing away Gale. Yeah. I don't know. I know which one had me more on pins and needles. So, okay. I feel like it's a bold claim, but defensible. And mm-hmm. I'd like to see some people make an attempt. Mike from Louisiana. Chuck's link to sanity was tenuous at best this season. He put himself together to battle Jimmy and later in the season to get back to his normal partnership duties at the firm. When Howard outsmarted Chuck and bought him out, that removed all of his motivation to recover. Call me a cynical bastard, but do you think Howard bet on Chuck's illness and bought him off for cheap? Think about it. I'm assuming Chuck no longer has support from the firm because he was bought out and he's estranged from Jimmy. Howard knew the situation. I'm thinking he suspected that Chuck would relapse and no one would be there to buy the groceries and perform the normal errands. $3 million is a lot of money, but I think he calculated it would be the one and only payment and Chuck would eventually die or be committed.
I hope I never cross this listener because that thought had not even gone through my head that Howard would have intentionally driven Chuck mad, hoping that he would off himself before cashing the check. Like,
that sounds awfully close to you calling him a cynical bastard.
Me? Yeah.
He said, call me a cynical bastard. So he invited you to do so. I mean, yeah. You're not out of line.
I'd say you're a cynical bastard. That's horrific. No, I hadn't even thought about that. And I don't think that was Howard's intention.
I mean, you're certainly cynical. I don't know if you know your own father.
Sure.
I mean, that's your own business.
Fair.
I think that Howard genuinely loved and respected Chuck, and this was very painful
yeah.
for him to do all around.
It seemed like it.
And I also don't know legally that they are off the hook from paying him, because I feel like that he's got an estate, mm-hmm. and that's one of the other open questions, what becomes of Chuck's estate? Who inherits the money?
That's a fine question.
And part of it is if he's got this partnership agreement and they're got this payment plan, like I think that, you know, fuck, I'm not an attorney, let alone a probate attorney. But I feel like that they would be on the hook to pay somebody that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you look at any company really, and they have contingency plans for when, you know, inevitably something bad happens to either a founder or a board member or whatever. Those are all written into the contract, right?
Right.
And the idea that they would have this.
I mean, even our shitty two-bit operation has yeah. procedures for if one of us to die, what happens and who can do it and who gets first dibs and all that.
Right. And if they have in place a payment plan
uh-huh.
to oust one of the partners, the majority stakeholder, mm-hmm. Seemingly, or, that's up for debate. But if they have this plan in place, three payments of X amount of dollars,
right.
like they've got in place a plan for when Chuck expires.
Agreed.
Now, I don't know what the plan is. Maybe they do have to pay some large sum of money to his estate, but
right.
clearly Howard is prepared to do that. So,
yeah, really, really puts dead money into perspective, though.
Yeah.
Lucas Smith, I'll try to make this short and sweet. While I don't know if I exactly have low standards, when I do find a show I like, it's usually pretty hard for me to be disappointed. Season 5 of The Wire is fine. I liked ending Lost, even as admittedly flawed. And I love The Leftovers, even if the finale left me wanting more supernatural and less of a simple love story. Hmm. With that in mind, I'm reading a lot of effusive praise of this season finale of Better Call Saul. And to me, it was good as an episode, but underwhelming as a season capstone. Several episodes of the pill drama, and wait for it, everything happens with Hector in a completely predictable way. Oh. Not even a completely predictable way, but the completely predictable way. And if you two or I or a random viewer who has aware of the title of this episode in advance was asked what would happen in finale, Chuck knocks over a lantern and burns down the house would have come up very frequently. yes, the suicide angle is interesting, but otherwise it was another one of those examples of everything parsing out exactly how you think. I want to stop there and say that I think part of this is because this is very anti-Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad was all about Walt coming up with a meticulous plan. Half the time, it would go off correctly, but then get him in worse trouble.
Yeah.
The other time, it would just completely be botched and get him in more trouble.
Mm-hmm.
It was very rare to see a plan just entirely execute and everything be fine. That was more of a late stage thing where they're winding up Walt's storyline. So I kind of feel like Vince has trained us to see things not going smoothly and looking for other angles, and this was a pretty predictable. They've set this up all season long, and it actually unfolded how we thought it was going to unfold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Walt doesn't blow up Gus in the car. He has to do the whole thing with the bell and Hector and all that stuff. And
yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'll have more to say about that in the wrap-up.
The other thing I want
to talk about it.
I forgot to mention this, is that did you notice the bell on Poppy's service counter
that was
conspicuously in focus when he was talking to Hector?
Did Hector pocket it on his way out?
And it was a fancy red one.
Oh, was it?
It wasn't like the one eventually, gold, but it, yeah. That was a little bit of a foreshadow.
Nice.
Lucas continues, I can appreciate a slow burn. I can even sort of appreciate the gratuitous shots of Mike doing something technical for several minutes. I can appreciate that Jimmy has developed a lot of character, even if it seems that at the end of this episode, he's not that much further along than he was at the end of season one finale. But shit, at least give me a little meat with my pudding when it comes time to wrap things up. Don't have everything play out nearly as exactly as you expected over a month ago. So there you go. That was one kind of slightly, you know, disappointed take. Reginald, I'm done. I'm going to accept Jimmy for the dangerous person he is and not worry about his motivation. I am no longer going to personally invest in his character. Many on Jimmy's side will point to this week's episode and say, how can you turn against Jimmy? Look how hard he is trying to make amends to everyone. Look how he apologized, sort of, to Chuck. Look how he totally exposes his machinations to Irene and her friends. Look at how well he takes care of Kim. Whatever, I don't care. A point could be made that he feels genuine contrition over this past deeds, but it's also just as compelling an argument that Jimmy just likes to be the ultimate puppet master. I can manipulate the emotions and actions of all those around me at any time to satisfy my own desires. I don't care which it is anymore. There's a part of me, 10 to 20%, that doesn't even want to watch next season. Like Howard said last week, and Chuck reiterated in different words this week, Jimmy, just be honest about who you are and what, and be done with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this goes all the way back to, what, early season two with Jimmy in the pool after getting, you know, mixed up in the Sandpiper case and getting 20% of that. He kind of did have a moment where he was like, this is who I am, you know?
Yeah.
I'm the con man. I'm the guy who's going to be out having fun. I'm not the straight-laced, straight and narrow kind of guy.
Yeah.
I kind of do... You know, think he should lean into that, and I think eventually he does, because we see Saul is very much that guy.
And that gets him in trouble, too.
It does, yeah. But at least he's being, you know, honest with himself.
To Reginald's point, I don't think that turning against Jimmy is the end of the world, because everyone, well, not everyone, there's a few ride-or-die Walt fans at the end, but almost everyone turned against Walter White and switched allegiances to Jesse or Mike or something.
Yeah.
Along the run of Breaking Bad, and it was still fascinating to the end. At least I thought so. So I think you can turn against Jimmy as a character and rooting for him to be good, and just, you know, with that. And I don't know, like 10 to 20% not wanting to watch. That's, I feel like that's an emotional reaction, something that Vince Gilligan wouldn't even like be surprised at.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like everybody's going to come back though.
Yeah,
everyone came back after you turned against now. The only difference is I don't know who the protagonist is going forward, because we always had Jesse
like
there.
Kim.
We always had Walt's family. We always had Hank. There's a lot of different things we could switch allegiances to. I don't feel that way about Kim.
I think it's Kim and Mike, honestly. I wish Kim wasn't, I guess, under the influence or the spell of Jimmy as much as she is or seems to be. But I think regardless of what you think about Kim, there's always Mike, right?
Uh-huh.
Mike is sort of the hero of his own story. in as much as anybody is in this
But there's he's
universe.
So unconnected. So the thing, I guess the thing that the Walter had going for is like all these people were intimately connected to him.
Yeah.
Like Jesse, his family, Hank, which is also his family, they were all connected to him in a very real way. Jimmy, like Kim would be better off if she just left and cut, or if he goes the break. Like, she's not putting herself in danger, doesn't feel like. I thought that's kind of where they would eventually develop the storyline. Maybe they will. Mike barely feels connected to Jimmy.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, you can switch protagonists, but that's weird that that Jimmy will not be the antagonist, right? It's his fucking show.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And he's no longer the person we're rooting for, nor the arch villain. That's a weird position to be in.
Totally it is. I'm going to give you that for sure. I think it's almost weird that you have like a protagonist in aggregate here between all of the other characters.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Like, I'm sort of rooting for all of these characters. Kim, Mike, uh-huh. Nacho, Gus, Nacho's dad, uh-huh. like Francesca. I'm rooting for all these side characters.
There's a lot
at this
of core
point.
Decent people.
Yeah.
Orbiting loosely around Jimmy.
Right. And that's enough, I guess, to keep me engaged and sort of adds up to one main protagonist for me.
Yeah. The other thing that united about Walter is that they all the protagonists wanted one thing. They all wanted to see Walt taken down.
Yeah.
Mike doesn't want to see Jimmy taken down. Kim doesn't want to see Jimmy taken down. Francesca doesn't. Like,
yeah.
It is an interesting construction, and maybe part of it is, you know, pace what Reginald's saying here. We need to get over the fact once and for all that this is not Breaking Bad. This
oh,
is
sure.
its own thing, and some of the patterns that we – those aren't Vince Gilligan-isms. Those were Breaking Bad-isms, and this is a different show.
And this is fundamentally two stories, right? This is the story of Jimmy and Kim in the law field. This is a story of Mike and Gus in the criminal field, and to a smaller extent, Nacho, I think.
Yeah, and ultimately, I wonder if it's an argument that this didn't necessarily work. Like if we get 4 or 5 seasons down the line, we may like, hey, this was entertaining, and the performances are great, and everyone gave a shit, and it was very beautiful to look at, but it just didn't catch fire like Breaking Bad did, and that's okay.
Maybe the structure of it just didn't lend itself to the heights of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, and I think that's okay.
Okay.
Because, like, I certainly can't see myself thinking that I've wasted my time watching this because there's been some amazing stuff, and I felt genuine. The last two especially episodes have really wrung some genuine emotion out of me, so it's always good. Tammy in Texas, she reminded me. I was about to forget. Did y'all catch the bright red bell on the counter at Nacho's dad's shop? I wanted Hector to ring it so bad. She also says, I'm confused about what Nacho was trying to do. Was he trying to kill Hector and leave, or kill him and then tell the other guy I found him like that?
Yeah, no, it's stupid.
Seems like he was playing a little fast and loose for someone who's usually pretty careful. I
just don't think about it because it doesn't make any sense.
I think it's just he was desperate. Now, I will go completely along with my co-counsel here on the rest of his legal argument against that scene.
Right.
But I feel like they already told the story of him being super desperate.
Sure, yeah.
Josh F., are we to believe that Chuck lives in New Mexico and doesn't have an air conditioner or even electric fans? Perhaps they answered this in past episodes, but it never occurred to me to question it until I saw Chuck ripping his home apart to find the electrical source. As someone who lives in the Southeast where older people without air conditioning literally die during the summer, I find it difficult to believe. You know...
What? Well, I mean, it's...
I've since
taken
moved
it out.
Into a house that I will describe as being poorly insulated, and it's been kind of hot in some nights. We're trying to find a setup that works best for us. That's the thing I was thinking of. This guy who lives in New Mexico, and it's in March, so it can be kind of cool, and it's dry. When it gets, like, 120 degrees, I don't care how dry that heat is, what the hell does Chuck do? Does he sleep outside? No.
He strips naked.
He just sleeps naked?
Yeah.
And maybe that's where all the ice, it wasn't the coolest bacon. It was the coolest ham hocks.
It was. He sits in a tub of ice.
Yeah, Jimmy had to bring 200 pounds of ice that Chuck would meticulously pour in his bathtub, and he'd sleep in that.
I guess my question is, what do you mean he doesn't have AC? Is there something that indicates
this man has no AC? That man had no AC in the heights of his power delusion. There's no way.
Oh, certainly,
That's what I'm saying. And he's sitting there.
I mean, being warm is the least of this man's inconveniences, right? He's covering himself in space blankets, lining the walls, tearing them down.
That's like, also not going to help a swamp ass. Those space blankets, man.
That's totally true. But come on. He's got bigger problems to worry about than being a little sweaty.
There you go, Josh F. He's just a little sweaty. He'll be okay. Jason Lee, I feel like this show glosses over some crucial details, leading us to make assumptions or guesses. In particular is why Kim shows such affection to Jimmy despite her being aware of what's going on with the Golden Girls, a hot topic at the podcast already, I'm sure. You mm-hmm. are correct. And I will say that you say such affection, I disagree with that analysis. I feel like this is yeah. these are people who it's kind of like you want to break up with your girlfriend and it's mid-October.
Mm-hmm.
And you got Thanksgiving and Christmas staring down the barrel and you're not even ready to go there. And like, who breaks? Like, it's kind of, that's how, like, there's so much shit going on with both of them that they're just trying to go through the motions and not make anything worse.
I would liken it to the air-conditionless Chuck.
They're just sweaty.
They're hot.
They'll be fine.
They're hot and cold.
Throw
right?
a space blanket over them.
Yeah. This is clearly a couple who's hot and cold.
Mm-hmm.
Like they go through moments where they have intense feelings for each other. They go through moments where they don't.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's just going to look like this.
He wants us to analyze which of these four situations we think is the explanation for her behavior. One, Jimmy didn't tell Kim the whole story of how he got Irene to agree to settle, leaving out details here and there to make him look acceptable.
Possible.
I think that's entirely possible. Two, Kim accepts Jimmy's monstrous actions because he's there for her in the low and scary point in her life.
Also possible.
Also
she
possible.
Knew about the stuff with Chuck. She knew about that.
Like it also seems she's seeming like, you know what? My way is pretty effed up and I almost killed people. Jimmy uh-huh. hurt people's feelings. Uh-huh. Who am I to judge? Like every once in a while I'll have a situation yeah. where like, I'll be super judgy about somebody, and then I'll hit a low point in my life, and I'm like, you know what? Maybe they got the right idea. Maybe this is crazy. I could see that.
Yeah.
Three, Kim's moral barometer is calibrated way differently than ours, which I don't think that's not inconsistent with her character. Four, Kim doesn't care because she's taking the good stuff and is becoming addicted to painkillers and will soon have her Movantik moment.
Also possible.
Also possible.
Yeah.
So I think blends of 1, 2, and 4 plus a little dash of Aaron's
Christ.
5.
If she comes back a year from now on Movantik, I'm going to shit myself.
So will she. She will shit a you.
Yep.
Either way, this leads us to the ultimate question. What will be the wedge that separates Kim and Jimmy? That... Or will Kim still be with Jimmy Saul throughout the BCS and Breaking Bad timelines, making Jimmy Saul's abrupt change to Gene and abandonment of Kim all the more tragic?
Nah.
Hey, if Mike can abandon Kaylee, no problem. Jimmy and Saul can take off and abandon Kimmy for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's a good question for the wrap-up podcast.
Okay.
What is the wedge? Because I feel like they backtrack so hard on that I thought it was going to be her discovering this shit with the elderly people.
Yeah.
But clearly that's not going to be it.
Nope.
I like the Wendy. I really like the Wendy theory. That would be hats off. Bravo, Vince.
Well, I just spelled a part with three P's. This is a long podcast.
Yep. Eliza V, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the pacing of the evolution of Saul. I felt like Jimmy was closer to becoming Saul we know and love for Breaking Bad at the end of season one than when he rues the decision to return to Cash and peels out of the parking lot humming Smoke on the Water. I wonder if the Villa gang has grown too fond of kind-hearted Jimmy to really commit and turn him into Saul. That's not a bad question, because that kind of got you pumped for Saul.
Yeah.
The last two finales have not gotten us pumped for Saul. Mm-hmm. They're going the opposite way. I'll entertain this last paragraph. I was also listening to one of your old Breaking Bad podcasts, season 3 or 4, I can't recall which. At one point, while Breaking Bad was airing, Aaron made the comment, paraphrasing, that he perceived Saul's shtick as an act. If you remember your thought process from a few years back, could you elaborate?
Christ, that was a long time ago.
When I say shtick, I think it means that I don't feel... And now I feel like this is ultimately right. Like, I don't feel like there. How am I going to explain this? When he's given Walt this whole talk about how he's actually a McGill, but he rolls the Saul Goodman because the people he represent likes a brother from the tribe, I don't feel like that's the way Jimmy McGill talks. I feel like that's Jimmy McGill working a scam, working an angle. He's thinking what this person, like I'm going to let you in on a little secret. You're not like those low-life idiots. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to level with you, and you're going to be, I can perceive that you're more perceptive and not that racist and bloody-minded. That's what I mean. Like, and there was also very little sound legal guidance. It all felt like it was all car wash scams and scamming parents out of houses with drug pretenses and a little bit of going and bracing cops in the box, you know, and saying you can't talk to my and swinging your dick around. But that too felt more like a ballsy thing than a legal approach. So I guess that's what I meant by shtick. And I feel like watching Better Call Saul, I fully appreciate the fact that I don't think we ever heard Jimmy McGill speak in Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Except for maybe when he was on his knees in the desert.
Uh-huh.
It's all been this Saul persona, and you never saw him behind the shtick. So, yeah, there you go. We got a legal corner.
Okay.
Doug L., first question, who inherits Chuck's estate? From what we've seen, Jimmy appears to be Chuck's closest living relative. If Chuck dies without a valid will, everything would almost certainly pass to him. But of course, Chuck is not the kind of person who would die intestate. This raises two questions. Who is the executor of the estate, and who actually receives what? Getting the state of their relationship, is possible Chuck cut Jimmy out of the will or trust, thus maybe setting up something for next season where Jimmy has to mount some fight to try and get what would be surely a sizable inheritance. There's also a question about insurance benefits, both for the fire damage and possible life insurance for Chuck. Chuck's the kind of person who would possess both kinds of insurance, and indeed HH and M might even have some sort of insurance on him. There could be issues lurking there as well. Without knowing more, it's difficult to speculate. I talked about how I can't see Jimmy ever getting his hands on millions of dollars, and sure enough, this episode, they kind of redid that whole plot line. I don't see him getting a big windfall. Why wouldn't this go to his wife? I feel like Chuck would leave everything to her.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. Like, who does this go to? And I seriously doubt it's Jimmy. And I know he has a plan for it. I just... Rebecca?
Giving it to Rebecca would be tidy because it gets it out of the ecosystem. The money just goes away. And, and there's a solid answer for it. Who got it? What impact does it have on a story? Nothing.
Yeah.
It's a great way to take all these logical questions and just dismiss them.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? You don't have to worry about traveling Europe and Asia, and you're fully funded now. Assuming Jimmy inherits something, what can he get? Aside from the obvious money, property, there's other potential complications. The biggest question mark being the payout from HH&M. Chuck never likely cashed a check from Howard, and it's unclear how much of the payout agreement was formalized, especially with Howard paying Chuck out of his own pocket. While Chuck's retirement was very public, what happened behind closed doors was not. Howard likely would not want to make that large payout, especially knowing that Jimmy would likely be the beneficiary. That's a good point. The fact that, like, all this is not even a handshake deal. It's all done under the table. Like, couldn't Howard just say he decided to retire? We all saw it. He walked out of the building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's possible. There's going to be something to pay.
Yeah, they still there is something in the clause of the partnership agreement that would probably outline all this.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be something like, oh, he has the right of first refusal to buy his stake out of the company.
Yeah.
If the board chooses not to, or anyone on the board, whatever.
Or it doesn't have to be three payments. It can be structured differently because it's an unexpected death.
Yeah. There could be all sorts of contingencies. And if not, I mean, I guess it would just roll into his...
I mean, that's something I'm looking into. Buying insurance for your ass.
Oh, God.
I can buy... If you die, I can buy your share of the company without
this
going into debt.
This has got to be illegal. This has to be illegal.
Well, Doug, write in on the end of the... Because it's... But you know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of people do that. So, like, this could be... Yes, he owes the money, but there's an insurance policy on Chuck that he cashes to cover the fee that he has to buy out the estate.
Right.
That would be super tidy for Chuck or for Howard.
Yeah.
Honestly, I see.
So a lot of people are going to say, oh, but he killed himself. How could he possibly cash an insurance claim? So he's probably had an insurance policy, a life insurance policy for a very long time.
Yeah.
And most of those have clauses that say, okay, if it's suicide within like 6 months of initiating the policy.
I've got two separate life insurance policies. They were all a 2-year period.
Okay, yeah.
So I could literally blow my brains out on the air saying that I'm committing insurance fraud just so my wife and son will have money and they still have to pay it out.
Yeah.
I took those policies out years ago.
Right.
Question, arson. This is one more of a long shot, but there's a chance that the police could wrongly conclude that Jimmy had something to do with the fire. This is the Aaron theory.
It's the least interesting angle for me, like, honestly.
I'm not saying you're wrong, because okay. when you said that, that kind of like I immediately realized the truth of it. Because okay. it just further entangles Jimmy, who needs more entanglements, and puts him in real legal jeopardy, which he can't be under if he rolls with his law degree.
Right.
So he goes all the things I talk about, the public animosity, the fact he's the last person to see him alive, to the outside world, he'd conquered his illness, is using electricity again. So I thought we did a pretty good job talking about that. I don't think it's a great engine as Doug puts out for the next season, but it's a possibility. It's something the writers could play with if they wanted
sure.
to.
Yeah.
It could also be a false drama that they use to kind of keep Jimmy moving forward with some little drama while Mike is developing something.
Mm-hmm.
For Sandpiper, the show leads us to believe that Jimmy's yoga session confession put the old folks back where they were in terms of wanting to settle for the Sandpiper case. The case still, of course, lingers on. The show could still settle at any time to give Jimmy a boost or use it as a vehicle to create more problems for him. I've seen some discussions online to suggest that Jimmy cannot receive his share of the settlement based on his actions, but that's not the case. While he may be perceived as a bad person, his share of the settlement is contractually obligated based on his work on putting the case together and getting it to Davis and Maine.
Yeah.
That unlikely cannot be done.
I mean, even if he gets disbarred, right?
Well, so I actually, because I wanted to really cover all my bases, because I was kind of wondering that myself. And I said, Doug, do you find it persuasive that the old ladies themselves can force Jimmy off? Like, is there not a no confidence thing a client can file to fire counsel? And he says whether they could do that would depend on the terms of the agreement, but my guess is no. Jimmy earned that share by the hard work he put in earlier. Later bad acts do not wipe away his right to compensation. It's also the product of an agreement between Jimmy and Davis and Maine. The old ladies are not parties to that agreement, so they would not have standing to interfere with the arrangement. And I said, what he did be construed as practicing law by giving advice to his former clients or somehow tampering? Doug says, it's a gray issue. He doesn't actually give them any legal advice. He's careful to say things like follow your heart, which would not count. He's obviously manipulating them. That's not giving legal advice per se, but I could certainly see the bar not looking kindly upon it, especially since he's already on thin ice.
Mm-hmm.
However, I mean,
it still doesn't affect his agreement with Davis and May.
And that goes back to your point, too, which is we know he doesn't get disbarred. Because he's still practicing law, unless he's just brazenly practicing law without a license.
Which you would get shut down immediately, I would think, with commercials on the air. And
yeah.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. And that's it. That's it. Better cast Saul at baldmove.com. Did you think it was funny when he said, we'll get a better wall, that the most recognizable landmark of Saul Goodman, aside from the Statue of Liberty, is his giant columnar wall of Constitution?
He definitely has a better wall.
Is that a better wall?
I think so. Yeah.
In many Saul's ways, it's world. A worse wall.
Well, yeah, but Saul's that's a better Saul wall.
Better
for sure.
God, you're going to hell for that. All right, Better Cast Saul. If you'd like to send in Better Cast Saul at baldmove.com. If you'd like to send us feedback for next week's wrap-up. How are we feeling? I feel like a lot of people are there's a lot of passionate fans. I count myself as one of them, but some of us are I don't know. Breaking Bad felt like it always built a bigger head of steam.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that, like, yeah, maybe we need to step back and say this is not Breaking Bad, but I guess I kind of expected, and you know, Chuck committing suicide that's a pretty good head of steam.
It's a big vent.
You could boil a big pot of water and make a lot of steam from the fire he set.
Yep.
But it does feel, I feel like for me, like it was a slight step back in terms of overall cohesiveness and fluidity this season. And I would like to see people argue otherwise, because I'm very open to be persuaded. Any last thoughts before we say goodbye until the wrap-up podcast?
Nope. I think that's it.
All right. We'll see you next week. You can find all the stuff we do at baldmove.com. Follow us on social media at facebook.com/baldmove, at baldmove on Twitter and Instagram. We'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye-bye.